All right, so we will go into the microphone.
We'll be discussing the elections later, as well as potentially a resolution that was approved by the executive committee. So if you have anything that you want to speak about that doesn't have to do with elections, or any of the resolutions on the floor, feel free to speak.
Can you speak into the mic?
So, I have been at the Cornell ILR class of 16. I was called as is on elections, I checked one and had a meeting, I got out of the year. For those of you who don't know me, I was on a second grade for years as an undergraduate. I'm currently a dual JD MBA student, so I'm at the law school, business school. And the recent editorial some comments are that I wanted to stop it because I was actually on the assembly when we adopted the language concerning the JCC review back in 2014. And considering that I know very many of the problem, and I wanted to find what happened. So, in my context, in the fall of 2014 primary elections, there was a potential always that everybody would lose and disqualify. And whenever the assembly was looking at the spring election, which was spring of 2015, the elections committee made a request for more independence, but also in the same request, in that request for independence, they need to have this a check against the issues, which is pretty biased, which is the committee always act in a way that is ethical. So this is the part of the amendments that year, I think, Sarah, that now I'm minor. They had a clause about the independence of the committee, and they also had a clause about the appeal that's currently being discussed. And in essence, the discussion that happened at the time, both with members of the assembly and my own people after me talking, we were all very much convinced, actually, I don't want to be convinced, this is not for the recommendation, but rather that the arbiter, if it was over to the elections committee. Shagra had who's the director of elections that year, and he had up here in popped out and triple that it was bias. And even actually, for further history, what happened was the original language was going to have the senior director of campus relations be the arbiter. It turns out that when this resolution was conveyed to the president in December, the president replied in January, that had ceased to exist. So we actually went back and the assembly asked the judicial council at the time, Van Venicus, what her thoughts were about serving as arbiter. And in that discussion, I told them and I wrote her quite extensively. It would make clear to her that she was that the agency would serve the role as an appeal back to the court. It was not really the recommendation, rather than by the town, they could overturn it. And going through my notes of the meeting, we read the minutes and listened to part of the audio last night. I remain 100% certain that I am personally certain that the assembly was led to believe at the time that it was not just a recommendation, but rather the ability to overturn. And further, at the time, I'm certain most, if not all, of my colleagues were under a similar impression. And as I said, we asked the JCC in the spring, we had fine with a person to take this role. In my discussions with the JCC, she was also clear that she was under the impression that he was told this was not her recommendation, rather a appeal. That's also why the current JCC wrote the report against it was, and it is an actual appeal, not just a recommendation. Finally, in terms of the way the language is worded, looking at it now, after law school for 6 years, I struggle because law school is nothing very good. It's being passed away out of the passive voice takes things harder to understand, easier to interpret. But after talking to Dan, rereading it, I still confident that it is not just a report, but it is the deal. And after talking to my some colleagues in law school, a lot of them they either said, hey, it is clear that it's in the JCC, or even if it's not necessarily clear, the context makes it almost, frankly, not doesn't make sense to anybody else. But they'll agree that the passive voice makes it much more complex than it should be. I mean, I expect them to take care of that, but I would be more than happy to talk to anyone if they want. Someone who, frankly, went through elections a number of years ago, so go through with how we can possibly type the language to make sure whatever the assembly decides to hear. But I guess the bottom line is, despite all the discussions there about the concerns, when this was passed, my understanding, and I'm sure it was shared by many others, that this language, rather it was buying an appeal of the JCC vote in the elections committee and the other bias. The JCC at the time, right, so under that pressure, the current JCC under that pressure, the language is not perfect, but I think it is clear enough. And again, the context of the intent and state the law provides the assembly's clarity. happy to answer any questions. I actually have a lockdown. I actually have a meeting for all school clinic. I don't have to sit around and keep asking.
Does anyone have any questions for Matt? One thing before we go to questions, do you have a date for when this was discussed?
So we can like a minute. Yes. So this is the original elections meetings were, I think this is, I've been touched on this, were the November 13th, 2014 meeting. They were passed later that year. They were great. The president was not fantastic. I was on the national list, so I saw everything's back for it. They were great. The president in 14 and December. President of Biden, 14 and January, when the holidays President in Trump explicitly noted that A, the senior director of head relations, sorry, senior director of head relations no longer existed, and that it's something we need to find somewhere else, and clear with that what the intent was. Which is also why the pro-physical talents of time management is discussion was very clear what this was, and Shannon was having the role in her question, again, which was told was this is a body of the field, not a recommendation.
Okay, thank you. Do any members of the assembly have any questions for that? Okay. Are there any other members of the community that would like to speak at this time? Okay. With that, we will be closing the microphone.
Thank you. We'll go into approval of the minutes. If everyone can take 1 minute to look over the March 29 minutes, and if nothing is wrong, then make a motion to approve. All right, is there any dissent? If not, then you will approve it. Next, we're going to announcements and reports. We have the graduate trustee candidates here with us today. They please come up to the floor. You just introduce yourself. Yeah, 2 minutes.
Hello, thank you for having us. My name is Rebecca Harrison. It wasn't until I left Ithaca after graduating from Cornell in science department in 2014 that I really began to appreciate the role of shared government. For a very brief period of time, I found myself at another academic institution where the very idea of students having access to administrators, departments, or trustees, or even a superficial role in making university decisions, was unthinkable. Cornell was backed on the principle that any person can find study and as a land grant institution, Cornell's legacy is an expression of educational opportunity, economic development, and interdisciplinary. I've had the enormous privilege to benefit from this as an undergraduate. Now as a graduate student, a varsity athletic coach, and a teacher for the sciences, the humanities, and the social sciences. But it's important for us to recognize that any person comes with qualification. Not every person has affordable access to a Cornell education, or, while here, access to truly shared governance. The power here is completely distributed. Our challenge today is not to outright dismiss the vision of Edwin Cornell, but rather to respond to campus climate issues in 2018 in a way that does not continue to erase the long history of exclusion on this campus. That history matters, but it's our transparency in voting on it.
30 seconds.
By voting for me, Rebecca Harrison, to represent the student body on the Cornell Board of Trustees, we're voting to elect a candidate with nearly 8 years of institutional knowledge about this university. It was always been disgruntled by campus politics, which I feel distract the bigger picture of the unique opportunities created by an institution.
Thank you. Before we go to the next speakers, I've done this before, but at 1 minute mark, I'll do this, and at 30 seconds, I'll say 30 seconds.
Great, you guys can do okay. So, with you, I haven't had the opportunity to meet
Yeah, my name is Anisha Mandini, and I am a third-year PhD candidate here at Computational Biology. So I'm running because I've spent the last 3 years as a student advocate, primarily through the Graduate Promotion Student Assembly, where I've spent the last 2 years on the executive committee. And I've come to realize that there's a lot more that Cornell can do and a lot more that we should do. If I was elected, the three things that are priority for me are one, making sure that diverse student perspectives are heard by the Board of Trustees. I think that there have been a couple of people here who may have had the opportunity to meet the board members in the past, but more often than not, most students will have access to the board. And it's also the students that do, it's also always the same students and the same student organizations. We have to do a better job of making sure that all students on campus and all student organizations have the opportunity to meet with board members and share their story. The second priority for me is promoting financial transparency. I think we have a culture at this campus that promotes top-down decisions where administrators and faculty make choices first and then solicit student feedback second. And I think that not only is that just not right from a shared governance model, but it's also woefully inefficient. We spent a lot of time debating those ideas in public when we could have hashed it out in committee. The third thing is building a more inclusive campus. I think the last year has really highlighted how much work we have to do. And I think the first step forward in doing that is making sure that we expand financial and logistical support for our resource centers, for student organizations, for educational programming, and academic departments on campus that are actively student members. If anyone has any questions, I'll be around.
My name is Tatiana, and I'm a candidate for CPC. I am a first-year PhD student in policy analysis. First, I want to acknowledge that there's been a lot of disappointment in the Board of Trustees, and acknowledge the space between students and the board, and offer to you a perspective of how to deal with this space different. So, in a sense, tell me that if you're going to vote for the student trustee, to please consider that I am offering a way to address not only student protective student issues, but to frame them in a way that the Board of Trustees is going and willing to listen. So I urge you that let's not continue the divide that is between students and the board. Let's not solidify these lines. Instead, let's work together as a community and an ally to frame issues in a not only in a perspective that it resonates with the board, but it also communicates what students' perspective is. And so with that, I give you that I am an experienced candidate. I'm an experienced candidate. I'm a student body vice president at my university and co-president at the institution where I studied abroad. So I do have experience navigating the university bureaucracy. Secondly, I would say that I offer a fresh perspective in my training as a policy analyst. So I'm not only looking to bring in student voices as allies, but I'm also critically looking at the data that informs the board. And I think with many of the conversations we've had with student organizations, I would say that I've pointed out many of the issues currently in the way we collect data, in the way we report it, and the voices that are left out of the data that is being used to promote board decisions and to solidify their stance. So I please ask you to consider to vote for a nominee based on the campus and to vote for a different perspective on how to approach it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Because we have not a lot of time, we're not going to take questions here, but if you guys can just state your net IDs, maybe our presenters can reach out to you individually.
I would say I can speak for all of us that if you go to the Canada website, you can click over our name. But if you want to write your net ID down, it's TP379. Also, I'm just easily available at TatianaWordPress.com.
Yeah, my net ID is MAM737. And you can also find out more information and contact me on my website, Bonisha.com.
And my net ID is RAH288. And you can find out more information about
Rebecca.
Thank you
so much, Rebecca.
Thank you for your time.
Hi, just a reminder, as of
because all students vote in the student elected trustee election. So beginning on Monday morning through Wednesday morning, all students will get emails with election reminders to vote for one of these three candidates. Thank you.
Thank you, Gina. We'll continue with announcements and reports. That says Chris.
Okay, so I'm going to do my announcements in reverse. The first is, so I just discovered this, Cornell has subscriptions to so many cool free things, but this one is really useful. So Cornell has the free subscription to the meditation app called Call. If you just take out your phone and Google Call Cornell, you find that any Cornell student has a free subscription to that. I just recently, like the day before yesterday, started doing this. I had never meditated before. They have like sessions that are each 10 minutes that really help you practice mindfulness. And there's actually a lot of scholarship that shows that mindfulness promotes concentration, cognitive performance, and has a whole slew of other benefits that really just improve your life, make you more calm person and more concentrated, better able to study. And I think particularly with the second round of prelims and finals coming up right now, that's very helpful to a lot of people. So definitely check that out. It's awesome. I just did it for the first time. I was like, oh, when it came back. I just increased like fivefold. It was great. So you should definitely try. Okay. And that was actually a serious announcement. You should definitely. So the second one is a more serious thing. I was hoping the president would call here, but I'm not sure if she is. It concerns.
Oh, so by the way, the agenda is there is an error, it's 5 to 10. She'll be on time.
Right. Anyway. So given that so many people are here right now, I think this is a great opportunity to highlight extreme structural inequalities that international students here face on campus. I think, like, especially regarding financial aid, you like most students face in any other population. So, international undergraduates at Cornell were not awarded financial aid on the official application or ineligible for financial aid during their entire undergraduate year, regardless of circumstances, including parental bankruptcy or debt. So, actually, I've had students email me and say that their parents died. Like financial assets are frozen, and because they had not applied or not received financial aid on their application, they like there was no way they could get that just because you know they hadn't applied initially, just because circumstances had changed. You know, other students have completed multiple years of education here, have like one more year left, and with the ground inflation of the country, their parents used to be able to pay full tuition or close to that, and they were on financial aid, but now the situation has changed. Their parents are no longer paid, but they just cannot be applied. I think that's a horrible inequity that definitely needs to be remedied. I'm currently trying to get contacts with the Board of Trustees, working on creating an endowment that will allow them to support students in these circumstances. Another problem is that international graduate students are typically ineligible for applying for financial aid. International financial aid is actually very, very limited. So it's only around $12 million, which is compared to around $2 million for students. So while international students comprise 10.7% of the undergraduate student body, financial aid budget is only around 4.8% the size of the domestic undergraduate financial aid budget. And there's only around 30 to 20% of undergraduate master students are actually receiving aid. That is compared to almost 50% of domestic undergraduate students receiving aid. So I think it's really important to be aware of these inequities. We also need to strive for creating more socioeconomic diversity among the international student population. That's a kind of what we're striving for. International students union, if anyone's interested, they can reach out to me at CAS5@Cornell.edu. And then if they ask me to put that out there, it's really important. So this is able to create the endowment and get to
yeah, so Chris is here again. Can you speak closer to the mic? Or is that a meditation app?
No.
You have another. Oh, you look at
it. Oh, sorry.
Yes, sir. Myra?
Hi, all. Just a reminder that the Student Assembly Summer Experience Grant is currently open. The Summer Experience Grant helps students afford unpaid or minimally paid summer internships. It can cover up to $3,000 of your experience. If y'all have any questions, please look at the Arts and Sciences and Career Services website. While Arts and Sciences Career Services administers the logistics behind the grant. This grant is open to all non-senior undergraduates at all 7 colleges. Again, the deadline is April 18th, and I really want to highlight that this grant takes into consideration your need. So if you are a student who really, really can't afford to pay for an unpaid or a minimally paid summer internship, please look into this grant and
Savannah?
Hi guys, I just want to announce that next week is the 4th annual Sexual Assault Awareness Week. It begins on Monday. So the WRC and other orgs have been working really hard. There's like movie screenings, there's an art walk, there's feminist food for thought, and so there's tons of ways to get involved. And so I'd encourage everyone in the SA and everyone in general just to be involved.
Thank you. Does anyone have any questions for any of the announcements? If not, the next on the agenda is a presentation by President Pollack and Peter Lombardi. If not, we will wait for 3 minutes. While we're waiting, I have a quick question to the sponsor of Resolution 38. Do we want to go forward with that? It's been on here for the past few weeks. Gonna do it? Okay, sounds good. Yeah? Okay. And also, alright, also for SA members, Gabe sent out his resolution to be added onto the agenda as a late edition. We need a vote to actually put it onto the agenda. So can we have that vote whether or not we want to do that? So if there's no dissent, so if you have dissent, any dissent? So just so that people in the audience also know, you dissent? Yeah, so I'll state the resolution first. So basically the resolution has to do with, so the resolution confirms that the gender should vote counselor provided ample evidence that the elections committee's decision to disqualify a candidate was biased, orders the Office of the Assemblies to release the votes of the presidential race, thereby determining the next who has to be president. So that is a resolution in question. And now, this we're having a vote to whether to put this onto the agenda. So, a little bit, please your dissent.
Agenda,
sir. Did you dissent? Okay, then we will vote to vote. Yes.
Can we accept it with the condition that both candidates recuse themselves? Yeah.
Yeah, you guys agree to that?
The brief criticism is that I think this is really nothing which is perfect, it's also a huge massive fight.
Okay, we're gonna vote to vote, okay? So we're going to go to vote on what our type of agenda. So all those in favor of voting. Oh, so yeah, to put this on the agenda. We're voting to discuss whether or not to put Resolution 44 onto the agenda to be discussed.
We're voting on whether or not to put this onto the agenda. When we vote, if you vote yes, it will be on the agenda.
Yeah. All those against. Abstentions? All right, by vote of 21-1-3, it passes. All right. So it will be on the agenda. And President Pollack is here, so let's welcome him.
Yes. Okay. So I really just want to take 15 minutes and bring you up to
President Paul, can you speak closer?
I'm sorry. I want to bring up the data on a few things, particularly on the data on our diversity and inclusion efforts, because it's very high priority for me, as I know it is for this body. We've got to continue to work on it. We've got to bring the faculty, staff, and students from various backgrounds together. I want to tell you a little bit about what we've been doing, because there's actually a lot going on that I think people don't always know how everything that's going on. One thing is there is an university website where you can go there to find out about everything that's going on. We have, as promised, implemented inquiry training for all the REAP organizations. One thing I'm very excited about is the CDI, the Center for Research and Innovation, is creating a new course of certain students. That's what a lot of help that will be available this fall for faculty and TAs. So to provide skills for teaching more effectively in multicultural classrooms and for dealing with difficult academic discussions in those lines. I'm very proud that we continue to welcome and advocate for undocumented students. In December, I joined 150 other university presidents and the President's Alliance for Higher Education Immigration, as well as for legal protection for DACA students. We are, of course, continuing to support our DACA students with aid and emergency fund that helps them apply for their renewal fee. The law school is providing legal assistance to DACA students and undocumented students. I also want to mention, we have a new assistant director of undocumented DACA students. His name is Kevin Graham. He's a PhD candidate at Rochester. I mentioned him before, but I had the opportunity to sit with him for about 45 minutes yesterday in law. And he's really a fabulous addition to this campus. Incredibly knowledgeable, incredibly caring. We've also reached out in other diversity initiative areas. We have a brand new hire, and we promised them all to put together an alternative dispute resolution process. And we've just hired an experienced mediator named Love Cohen. They might love to be. She consulted with the United Nations. She currently teaches at State University. She will be here for children. She will be spending on our process. Through the generosity of a wonderful donor, we're standing up a new center for first generation and low income students. Interviews for that director are taking place this week. We're also caregiving for the new LGBT Resource Center. As you know, we added several path conferences for people of color. And I want to congratulate all of you who worked on the inaugural Culture Fest on March 25th. I unfortunately wasn't able to make it, but I have taken the prize with the party that was great. So there is stuff happening, there's much more to be done. The presidential task force is hard at work. The survey was extended, the public hearing was extended, but it now closes tomorrow. I hope if you haven't filled it out, you fill it out immediately. The response rate for students, I have to say, is pretty low. It's below 5%, so please respond, show that you're interested in this. The committees have been working extremely hard. They've been meeting every week for multiple hours. They've had dozens of outreach meetings. They've met assemblies of faculty, staff, and student organizations. There are several themes emerging, and what they do is they learn about an issue, they collect the data, they meet with constituents, they come back, they process, and they repeat that cycle. They're planning a number of more outreach meetings in the next few weeks. If you, anyone would like to meet with them or provide input, you can email Presidential Task Force. Want to say a word about campus safety. You might have seen that there have been a couple of arrests over the past few days. There was a very disturbing incident at Founders Hall in which someone walked into the building and got some showering. The person who was arrested is a registered sex offender, and he's almost certainly going to be spending a lot of time in jail. There was also another very disturbing incident, the most recent College Town assault episode on multiple students. There were two local individuals, not students, arrested. They've been charged with assault. Look, these arrests don't diminish the impact of these events on our community. Nonetheless, we were pleased that the arrests happened. We were pleased to dedicate significant resources to CPD so that those responsible could be brought to justice. We did hear last night, we made some more minor, but it still matters about the two laptops, one from Mary Donald and one from Clara Dickinson. Vice President Lombardi's office has been looking into the installation of security cameras at the I think the last thing I want to do is I want to let you know that we have a new position of Vice President for Enrollment, who is going to oversee the Office of Admission, Financial Aid, and Registrar. And again, this is tied to our EOC.
focus on recruitment of a broadly diverse class and have efficient use of our central financial aid dollars so that we can create a national search begins soon. And the last thing I want to say is that I find that in getting on the road so that I can meet our alumni and learn what's worked for them, what they'd like to see. I just came back from Seoul, Korea, and from Hong Kong. Previously, I've been in India and London and over in the US. I'm extremely impressed by how enthusiastic and connected our worldwide body alumni is. I think that when you graduate, they will love me with open arms. They all said to me, what can I do to help? And I said, you can help on the front end by sending your best students, and you can help on the back end by helping our students find jobs or internships. We have all sorts of opportunities when you get out there. So that's pretty much it. I hope whether you stay on campus or have one spare in the rest of the store during spring break, we've got 4 more weeks of classes to go, so good luck for us.
Thank you. We do have a lot of questions, a limited time, so I'm going to go with two committee members per one SA member, and I'm going to limit each speaker to 1 minute. That's fine. Ezra Stein.
I'm not very good at it.
Thank you. So if you could come up, Ezra,
yes.
Use a mic.
So last semester, the Student Assembly and the University Assembly passed a resolution urging Cornell to disclose network information regarding sustainable investments and to improve the SARS rating and investor investment and finance. Cornell is 0.13 out of 7 points in this category, which is lower than all other Ivy League schools which participated. Despite this, my colleague rejected the resolution. Cornell is also not pursuing a committee on investor responsibility, while all other Ivy League schools have committee of some sort or policy of that sort. Cornell claims to be a leader in sustainability. Why does it sacrifice sites so low?
So with respect to the divestment issue, I'm going to turn the floor over to my vice president for communication, freedom and relations, Joel Molina. I do want to say with respect to sustainability, in fact, we are investing incredibly heavily. We have about a quarter of our faculty doing research in that area. We're making a lot of money. Resource heating. Every time we build a building, we build it to very high standards in New York campus around record. So I don't think it's true that we're not investing in sustainability. With respect to the investment question, I want to turn it over to Joel.
Yeah, well, the question was with regard to President Pava's recent rejection of the resolution. The point that she made in that resolution, I encourage all of you to read it. Is that the additional resources that go into elevating what is already, in our consideration, stellar stars rated would be not commensurate with the upside from it. Cornell is dedicating significant staff and faculty time to try to develop what would be an absolutely groundbreaking way to transform our campus to achieve our campus net neutrality goals, our fossil fuel, our carbon. Goals, trying to pursue our open source heat project, which is moving forward. We spend significant time ensuring that our faculty, who are leaders in this space, are engaging with elected officials and community members across the country and around the globe. So I think it's not exactly fair to characterize one response to a specific resolution as a fallback from an extraordinary commitment in this space.
Yeah, Elizabeth.
Hi, my name is Elizabeth. I'm a senior in marketing science major. I have a follow-up question. So, are you very kind of like to that kind of example of trying to achieve a new job in 2035?
Our absolute aspiration is to do that. That is why we're investing so heavily in open source heating. It is at this point. So if that doesn't happen, then all bets are off, and we'll have to see what we can do. Certainly hope that that will work. That's our best.
Thank you. I'd also like to just remind everyone that Conscious organization is currently pushing for financial transparency in our ballot, and it's also the one that got us talking about in this place, and there's not initially supported that. But can you tell us about what you're currently doing to improve transparency and transparency administration? I'm really familiar with the university considering possible divestment, but I know this concern extends to other areas. 43 of the trustees are 43 of the 64 trustees are elected by other trustees. We have passed 8 resolutions to 5 shared government talks on possible divestment. Circulation petition, 1,500 signatures each for students having to sat along by calling for Despite this overwhelming support, board trustees voted against possible investment. We have questions which still have to get answered 2 years after that. When the trustees voted on possible investment, which was accused themselves to the county researchers. What was the exact vote? How much of our endowment is currently invested in coal, gas, oil? Is there a room for evaluating work on a handful of these criteria provided?
Thank you for that question. As you know, 2 years ago, the trustees spent 3 hours in open session, a very thoughtful open session, carefully reviewing the policies for divestment. They came up with a very careful policy that sets very high bar as appropriate for an endowment university to be in places for. Open conversation and their endowments cannot be used as political tools to define. There's a very high threshold for investment, specifically what they do to alter principal behavior. And the trustees do not believe at this point that anything will change since 2016. That will be the more considered investment question.
Marco?
Hi, so I have a couple of points that I have questions about. So first, the task forces, as you mentioned, you know, like the Board of Trustees and this university in general takes very careful steps in the way that we approach things, but unfortunately, I still don't feel safe on this campus. And it's really concerning to me that you just mentioned that these task forces do a lot of outreach and analysis of the data, and then it's just essentially this cycle where nothing gets done. I've seen no results, and I still don't feel safe on this campus. So what do you think, slash when do you think these task forces are going to do something? My second.
So first of all, I tried in my opening statement. I'm not saying it's enough. There's lots of work to be done. But I do think we've been working very hard not to wait for the task forces, but to hold it up when we have an engine open. So I do think there's an article out in the Cornell Chronicle today that reports on what the task forces have been doing. Now, they've only been working since January. Also, overwhelming interest in being on the task force. The need to have a very complicated process of deciding what you want and all the time. They didn't go until January. I think if you read in the Cornell Chronicle today, you will get a sense of how outreach they've done, you'll get a sense of why, how they're trying to straddle this line. But again, the task force is not one of the all the work of nursing and attention. We're doing other things and we continue to do other things. In fact, one of the things we asked the task force to do was to talk about thoughtfulness, give us ideas about how to break the lines.
Thank you. Now, another question is to CAPS. I know that we recently hired to help, but unfortunately, I've still been waiting a month for my CAPS appointment, and so I was just wondering what is happening, you know, how many people were planning on hiring more, because these wait times are still, I'm sorry to say this, but I mean, they're pretty ridiculous, because when I can't go to class or do my assignments, and I just want to go home, take a semester off, it's really concerning that my answer is, we just hired 2 new people.
I'm sorry to hear that, like, talking about that, I actually just asked for We had, as many of you know, in the fall, we had a number of vacancies in staffing. This was before the two that we were filling. We got all those people filled. We started this semester with full staff. We had our wait time to keep those below 2 weeks all semester. At least that's the day I received. So we have like the offline situation. So we have, and I have authorized the growth, further growth, 2 more positions. So I realize that the demand continues.
2 more positions by when? I don't think.
Well, we launched the searches, so it just depends on how long it takes to I hope no later than the start of fall semester. We don't want to recruit therapists from Ithaca, and we hear from the other part of the states or outside the United States, and so it does take a little bit.
Okay, and then another thing, I don't know if you guys have noticed of the full disclosure movement that's been happening with all of our students. I don't know if you can talk about that, if like thoughts, anything.
Yeah, I'm waiting to get the petition. I want this on the basis of what the students want to the petition.
Thank you. Next is Kyra Butler.
My name is Kyra Butler, I'm a sophomore arts scientist. So why is the administration changing the arts and sciences curriculum to add more math and econ classes to cut the language requirement, but are not requiring classes that address issues of diversity? Wouldn't this be a good opportunity to do something about the height and hate crash and sexual assault we've seen on this campus?
Yes, I mean, I can't speak to the arts and sciences curriculum per se, that is the purview of the arts and science faculty. Well, one of the things I do want to see in West Campus are increased classes that address issues of inclusion, equity, and diversity. It is up to the faculty and to the curriculum, but the provost and I are pointing to the dean carrying to the dean carrying their faculty a strong interest in this.
Next is Daniel Correa.
And by the way, I would strongly recommend on this topic that student assembly get with the faculty and senate, because the faculty and senate that makes sense. The faculty on the curriculum. So you guys should arrange a meeting with them first.
Yeah, we'll do that. And before we go to the next question, can all SM members with laptops open and close the laptops? Can you get it outside?
There is a colleague. I wanted to just look back on my question. I'm a student from the University of Miami, and it's gracious and amazing that it's been coming out today. There is still a kind of contrast of comparing the two experiences and seeing what is still kind of lacking in the Cornell experience, as vast as the resources are. So one of the biggest things I've noticed as a student is a lack of true community space for student life. So this very building was conceived under the idea of being a place for the student body. And in my experience, any time that I felt hardship or needed a helping hand in the community, it has been kind of my ability to communicate with my colleagues and the Cornell community that has really helped me advance or evolve or come to really great ideas. And because our campus footprint is so big, it's really hard to find a place where you're welcome regardless of department. And I guess my question is really, what is being done to address the lack of adequate student space and community space? So I know the student assembly meets every Thursday, but this room isn't available every Thursday. It's not enough in the item room, but it's really not too far. It's really university.
I'm
going
to have to address the Lombardi room addresses because this is really important.
Good to see you. We had a good conversation about this recently. So I agree with you wholeheartedly. We need better space, we need better space focused on student life, community gathering, et cetera. Maybe it was an time I've spoken about this quite a bit. Since I arrived, the first major change that we'll see, and we'll talk about this a lot, is up on the campus with the growth in residential space up there. But I will mention that it's probably time, maybe before the end of the semester, for me to come back and do an update on the North Campus project. There is going to be a significant amount of kind of study, lounge, open, et cetera, space up on North Campus that won't be restricted to just those people who live in that particular facility. Unlike anything we've seen up there now or to date. The other thing that I will share and I put on my agenda and has been on the institution's 10-year plan is to really look at a wholesale refurbishment of William Stray Hall. Its centennial anniversary is in 2025, so we're approaching 100 years in this building. And it needs, it's overdue by about half that duration.
And I will just applaud the work that you and your colleagues are doing on the Straight Edge Project and the Student Assembly Infrastructure Fund to do a pilot pop-up. To do a pop-up. So I think these are great steps, and I stay very good.
Thank you. I just have a small follow-up regarding that question. So as you mentioned, the Student Activities Infrastructure Fund is allocating $40,000 of funding to renovate the 7,000 square meter space. There's next to the memorial. So that is a substantial help, really, and it really has to attack the whole process. But it's an effort that was currently entirely weighted by the student body. Are there any resources on campus to kind of funding? Phase one of the project has price about $100,000. Probably $40,000 is a substantial amount. Is there any way for that amount to be matched within the university? Are there funds existing?
It's a great question. I'm sure it's a really worthwhile project. What I will promise you we'll consider it within the context of everything we look at. What I can't do is on a one-off basis say, oh yeah, we'll fund this because one person would have an effort, because we have many, we want to hire more counselors for CAPS, there's many more commitments we have than we have funds for. But, it's a really great point, and we'll certainly take it back and weigh it within all our priorities we are right now.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, we are running out of a day, so one more question from Myra.
Hi, President Pollack, Honorable Morty. Thank you both for being here today. I have two substantial questions to ask, one pertaining to legacy emissions and the other to the university CFO's canceling on the meeting with Climate Justice Cornell. One, there is an effort currently underway by the First Generation Student Union. They're collecting petition signatures for Cornell to fully disclose and reevaluate its legacy emissions policy. This full disclosure campaign is also being led by other faculty student groups at 12 of our peer institutions. And Brown recently passed a referendum in support of this campaign. Former trustee, student elected trustee, Cornell undergrad and law alum Harvard O. Levy, executive director of Jack Kent Cooke Foundation, former chancellor of NYC Public Schools, wrote an op-ed in the New York Times calling on the universities to end their practice of legacy preference and admissions decisions, writing that they, quote, make efforts to open up access to low-income students while at the same time pulling applications in ways that give an advantage to the very wealthy. Literature that explores aggregate data suggests that this is true. What is your opinion on legacy admissions, President Pollack? Are you willing to fully disclose Cornell's legacy admissions data and reevaluate legacy admissions? Second, yesterday, the university CFO canceled a meeting planned with CJC after learning that they were planning on presenting her with quote-unquote demands. Student advocacy groups at Cornell have a long history of using the word demand. What is your opinion on the use of that word?
So, first of all, with respect to legacy admissions, I want to make it very clear in this file, and my vice president knows this, that one of my highest priorities, I hear me say this all the time, is that when we talk about increasing diversity on this campus, we pay very serious attention to increasing socioeconomic diversity. And I am working very hard in financial aid policies, in financial aid messaging, in message processes that yield students who are admitted, to increase the diversity of our students. I think if you go to the page, there's a look online, how we weigh different factors. And there's, I don't have any factor, extremely important, sort of important, a little bit of important, and in that little bit of important, we'll see the previous connections. So if you want to see that, we'll also see things like first generation. Sure, I can be able to get it. I'm not prepared to say, I'm not prepared to respond to the details of the petition. With respect to cancellation of the CFO's meeting, I believe there's an attempt to respect the
So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Okay, so I'm gonna amend the agenda a little bit because the Judicial Codes Counselor is here at GSUD by 6:15. So I'm gonna have a new business, straight to Resolution 44. So, Gabe, can you, So, because of the nature of this discussion, we're going to have a little bit of an unconventional method to this. So, we're going to have 5 minute opening. I'm sorry, 3 minute opening by Gabe on the resolution, and then 5 minute by Travis. Can you also, So, Travis is going to represent the Elections Committee. He's going to have a 5 minutes to explain this, the Elections Committee's views to the entire body, and then the JCC will have 5 minutes to do the same. So, Kendall? So, Gabe, you have 3 minutes. And also, I'll give all of you 30 second warnings.
All right, hello. Okay, so this is working. So, looks like we're doing something like this again. So basically, I think that there's been a lot of discussion about what happened with the SA elections. And I think that, you know, before, specifically the presidential race, before I like say anything, I want to put it on record that I did not endorse in the presidential race. I consider both Varun and Dale to be close friends of mine. And I am like truly indifferent between who wins the race and who loses. My opinion is that like there is no reason that Varun really should have been disqualified, and that the person who should become the next SA president should be whoever gets the most votes in the election. The reason that I think this is because, one, I believe democracy is like generally a good thing, and two, I think that there were a number of procedural irregularities at best, and I think that those procedural irregularities would warrant essentially the student assembly declaring the results that had been posted invalid because they were not consistent with the election rules. So that's my opinion. I think a lot of other people share that opinion, and I appreciate your time and hearing me out this evening.
Thank you. Before we continue, after the openings, we're going to go into discussion, and the student assembly members will have 1 minute. The media members will have 1 minute. Travis, representing the elections committee, will have 2 minutes, and JCC and Gabe together will have 2 minutes to speak, and we'll go in that order. And Myra is going to go around to the media members. If you guys want to speak, please give your names to Myra, and she'll send it over to me via text. Yes. And then Travis, you have up to 5 minutes to state the elections committee's position.
Before I respond on behalf of the elections committee, I first want to recognize that there are members of the elections committee in the audience, and they do have statement, so I would like to yield some time to them right now. So, just to address this matter, I want to just go over a few procedural procedures that have taken birth in this meeting. I actually was not supposed to be present here, and that was voiced to members of this assembly. I'm here now because of the extremity of the situation, as well as knowing that this was a surprise resolution formed throughout today. There have been meetings that have taken place in exec that have discussed my position, knowing that I cannot be there as well. So to see those same individuals work together to produce this resolution draws into question that, as well as the elections committee at this time has not yet addressed their reasoning. Their rationale. They have not been given the opportunity to explain their position. We are operating under the prize first that was reiterated to us in the election rules, saying that we have final say over this decision, as well as what was reiterated in the email sent to the staffing committee, saying that the elections committee does have final say over the elections, and that the report sent to the JCC is a recommendation, as well as when the JCC report was published, there was no outside communications that were relaying any information to us about what was in the contents of the presidential candidate's petition to the JCC. That document was not shared. I actually had to request it. And so it was a blindsiding to see the report as well as the document to know how one-sided it was. How it was one person presenting their one-sided argument of bias to then present additional bias and then give a report to then say that this was bias. When, how can you report on bias when you only have ever heard one side? And once again, the JCC's role is to report on procedural bias, not their personal opinion. It is not to say I believe I have final say. It is not to say that I believe that this and this and that. That report is full of personal opinions as well as irrelevant and inaccurate information that has been reported against the elections committee. And once again, everything right now is, there is no rule. I have yet to see one article in this that says the student assembly has permission to overrule the decision of the elections committee that says finality exists within our election rules. But once again, I want to reiterate that this assembly voted on twice, and that in that second meeting, where not one single complaint was raised against those rules, that now those same rules that have been approved by you, that the election committee has ruled that you should have been disqualified on them, are now being called into question because they no longer benefit you as an individual candidate. And that is bias within itself. And once again, I specifically want to make sure we are addressing the processes and not individuals. A lot of, as well as a lot of confidential information that's leaked in that person and that sources has not been named, as well as a lot of that information has to be striked when considering a lot of these matters. I especially want to make that well known. That any confidential information, I will very much say that's confidential and must be striked. So I'm here to once again say that if you pass this today, this is a rushed decision. Allow the elections committee to state their full opinion and interpretation and allow democracy to exist, but also allow the institution that exists to make sure that democracy can take place in a proper fashion and not allow that just because one person whose personal opinion is that was supposed to be a recommendation is now being considered final when that is not the presumption the elections committee was operating on. Thank you.
Thank you. Next will be the JCC for the 5 minutes.
Good evening. Before this meeting, I was asked by a friend in my reference to the idea that the judicial code counselor is the body that possesses with the authority to make a final decision of the time. And I was taken aback for a second because I didn't understand what they were talking about. Because for me, this situation, this analysis has nothing to do with that, me, Facebook posts. This wasn't about why Cameron was disqualified. It was about how he was disqualified. I reviewed the information provided to me by the Office of the Assembly. I've been criticized for not communicating with the Elections Committee. However, if I had reached out to the Elections Committee, my impartiality would have been questioned. I did not reach out to Varun. I received the reports of the election committee and the appeal by the candidate. It is the election committee's duty within the rules of the student assembly elections to produce a report that includes details. I was given two reports. Each report consisted of 5 sentences. Those 5 sentences lacked substance. They included conclusory statements that did not provide detail of the procedure or the analysis, who was present, what was discussed or analyzed. It was a statement that had no substance to it. The election committee's opportunity to pose their side to explain why their decision should be upheld should have been included in those reports. I found 4 instances of bias, all which could have stood on their own to overturn the election committee's decision. But the most egregious is the lack of detail in the written report. According to section title Article 2, Section E7, the Elections Committee is mandated to produce a sufficient report and they did not. Therefore, they inhibited Varun's ability to appeal to the Judicial Codes Counselor in a full fashion. And they impeded my ability to fully analyze whether or not they were biased, inherently creating bias. There has been a lot of discussion about whether who has the final say. But this isn't about finality. We want the Elections Committee to reach a final decision before you can analyze how they reached it. They had the opportunity to consider the initial challenge, and they found the disqualification to be the valid remedy. Then they had the opportunity to reconsider, and they once again upheld the disqualification. After that, I reviewed the information of how those decisions were reached. Within the rules themselves, it says if the Judicial Codes Council review finds bias, the decision may be overturned.
This isn't about the substance. This isn't about the decision that was actually reached. It was about how it was reached. If you go to court and a judge doesn't let you testify on your behalf, and finds you guilty of a crime, that's a final decision. Bangs the gavel, you're guilty. But that decision isn't valid. And in appellate court, you have the opportunity to view the procedures that were implemented in that case. Now, this isn't a courtroom, but it's a very similar analogy. There were procedural problems that were such an issue that any decision they reached had to have been overturned. It didn't matter if we committed the most egregious election violation and there was evidence over and over again that he did so. It was about how the procedures and rules were applied, and they were applied in a biased manner. Article 2, E8, Item 3 gives the Judicial Code Counselor the authority to review these procedures. And it gives the Judicial Code Counselor the authority to overturn. That's it's written in passively. The rules definitely need to be revised, but it would be nonsensical to give a biased body the duty to overturn themselves. I found bias, and it wasn't a recommendation, it was a ruling. And to take a slight ambiguity and twist it so far outside the plain meaning of the rules, the spirit of the rules, it would be a great injustice to the impartiality of this election. This wasn't a personal opinion. I have no stake in the game. No deal from CJC committee, but I have no personal relationship. I'm graduating on May 12th, and I simply wanted to make sure that when I was given the task to see if there was bias, and I was given the task to overturn the decision, that I did so with the. I did so with great consideration, and I stand by my interpretation, or not even interpretation, I say by the plain reading of the rules that the JCC had the final authority.
Thank you. Okay, so now we'll go into the discussion format that I outlined before. Just as a reminder, it'll be 1 minute for SA members, then we'll go 1 minute to the committee members, and Myra's going to run. 2 minutes for elections committee, that includes Travis, and 2 minutes for either the JCC or the interview question.
Just one clarification, are we first discussing the actual elections process and then the resolution item, or is this all one conversation? Just to be clear.
This is going to be whatever the committee members or the student assembly members bring up. And also for student assembly members, you feel free to have your laptop out and to review the resolution since it was not printed. So first is Debbie.
Most of my comments are actually in reference to the resolution that was brought to the table and not actually the comments that were said. I think that A, the rules contradict themselves. If you actually go back to the Charter of the Assembly, there is multiple instances where the election rules contradict themselves, which is a problem in itself. But to say, I think, or to add on to that, what rules were followed and what rules were followed, we don't have, the Elections Committee doesn't have the authority to decide what rules can and can't be applied. So I first want to say that, but I also want to say that does that actually negate the fact that there was other election rules and how a candidate is supposed to proceed in like, following them? Does the fact that the committee's was found to be allegedly like improper in the proceedings, does that negate the fact that there was a violation? Like I think there's more context that as student members, we don't know why the chapel says it, but there's many details about why the challenge was brought up that aren't actually being released to us. So for the resolution to call on us to make that decision is not in any way, shape, or form fair. It actually adds more bias to that, considering that a lot of us were able to actually endorse either candidate if we chose to do so. So I think there's greater issues whether or not the student assembly has that ability to check ourselves, but the rules in themselves are a passive and we are not followed, even other procedures in general. So. Take that as
well. Next is a community member, Shia Nelson. Shane Nelson.
Hi there. I'll turn in front of the question. I'm sort of hidden behind you. Okay. So I thought this is a question for the election committee. I was confused. What defines the promotional material for SA elections? Is it anything that anyone posts? Does it have to be from the candidate or anyone that they support. Could I put a profile picture with TJ Ball for a state president and then explicitly post something on Cornell Logo either intentionally or otherwise disqualify him? How are promotional materials defined? I didn't see that in the regulations. I wasn't sure if it's explicit anywhere. Especially with today with memes, with news, how are we defining a hard line or not a hard line? What promotional materials are? There's also an Instagram post with the Cornell logo on it from Dale's election Instagram. So I'm not sure how we define what does or does not have a Cornell logo.
Okay, next, the elections company has 2 minutes.
Just to go over a few different things, to first address, I guess, Debbie's point, could you just, I haven't actually heard any of the alleged violations and any of the contradictions that were in the bylaws versus the actual, in the actual election rules, so I'm kind of confused on that. But once again, to reiterate, this body voted on them, but they were confident, and there was not one single objection. Unanimous last December. Just to once again reiterate that point, you voted on these rules, you believed in them, and now when they're being used, it's problematic. So now, next address, what was your name again? I can't hear the beginning.
Shay.
So it's a few different things. So the first thing is, you are, as a candidate, responsible for anyone acting on your behalf. Anybody that is a part of your campaign team, the filing of it, and that is confidential information, and it will be released. And that is the point that I also came here today to say, that given the election committee the opportunity to produce the documents, they will be. But because of the response of the JCC in releasing this document in the middle of the night, blindsiding the election committee, I had no idea this document was coming out, and it was released. I only found out from the Daily Sun reporter in the middle of the night after a long day. But to say that, okay. So one, just to say that, just in terms of you are responsible for people acting on your behalf, this person that posted was on behalf, and it was considered promotional material as well. And we do know from the documents what part we're referring to. You don't find it because promotional materials are changing every day, but it's something that I'm advocating for a candidacy. And in regard to the Dale post, the Elections Committee is not an investigatory body. You don't search for these violations. Anything that is brought forth to us, we evaluate. If that is the case, we as Elections Committee members would not sleep. We would just be policing candidates. And that is not the role of our body, of the Elections Committee. Our job specifically is any challenges brought forth, and those challenges can be by any Cornell community member. That includes professors, professional staff, alumni, current undergraduates. That's why these rules are public knowledge. And you can submit, and when they are submitted, we take the time, our due diligence, to follow procedure to then address whatever challenges brought forth to us. We do not go out of our personal way to find them. And if we do find them, the Elections Committee, either as executive director or are the director of elections, or the Elections Committee can't submit personal challenges if they do find something.
Thank you. Next is 2 minutes by item of JCC or
Dave. Can we split it? Okay. I just wanted to say the Elections Committee had an opportunity to define what they were referring to as promotional material in either of their reports, and they declined to do so. I think part of Debbie's question was, do procedural errors essentially negate a candidate's violation of the rules? And yes, I think in every judicial system we have and in every democracy, if there is procedural error that is so egregious that the rules weren't applied fairly, we don't uphold the ruling of the biased body. My third year of law school, and that's what I've seen in my classes time and time again, whether that's administrative proceedings, legal proceedings, anything where people are given, rules give people rights. If those rights are violated, we don't uphold the rulings of the body that violated those rights. And I yield to you.
Yeah, so I think that there were a lot of, I think probably the biggest kind of, so you're right, like a lot of rules got trampled on. I think that like the most important, the biggest problem is that the biggest problem that you know, I saw from this is that, like, it specifically says in the election rules that you can, like, members of the elections committee cannot simultaneously be on an e-board of an organization that endorses a candidate, and then sit in on a challenge hearing involving that candidate. The word is involving. It is preposterous to claim that somehow a challenge hearing, you know, submitted against the room doesn't involve A, when disqualifying the room would make A the president. Like, that is not a reasonable interpretation of the rules. That does not make sense. Like, if it is, like in a two-person race, a challenge involves both of them because it affects both of them. So that, like, the fact that the committee didn't think it was biased in not recusing itself is, like, the proof that it's biased. Like, that's how you know.
We have to go. Because this will happen multiple times.
Oh, just a quick comment. I would just like to say, just very quick, I just feel that dividing the time, I think, is fair between the two, but it feels very accusatory knowing that there's one perspective being presented, but then two perspectives acting together. And I don't think that allows, once again, to have an equal playing field, to have a community discussion. It's not making this something that is very accusatory. Thank you.
That's well noted. No, that's Esther. Next is going to be Olivia.
Okay, so first off, I want to point out that if those, just quick procedural question, if those three members have recused themselves, or would you guys have had four to actually have a vote?
Yes.
Okay. The second thing that I wanted to say is, first of all, I've looked at the rule promotional materials has taken on, the word promotional materials has taken on completely different types of social media became a really big thing. And given that it's under the heading promotional materials, I generally do think that Facebook posts do find that, especially considering how a Facebook post, it would technically be a poster, it's just online. It says twice, no Cornell incident, no Cornell logo. I don't understand how much more that needs to be as I'm not trying to include any individual. But I think it's really important when you're running an election, sorry, I'm totally going to vote, that you have to read the election rules. I'm sorry that I know Travis, I know some people in the elections committee. I literally think there's some of the most upstanding people I have ever met, and to see the personal attacks that are happening against them over the last few days is honestly disgusting, and it's horrible care of mental health, and it is not fair. And also, no offense, Gabe, to say that you are unbiased in this, I'm calling bullshit.
Hey, let's watch that vote, okay, everyone, so please watch your language. This is the student assembly. Next is Austin McLaughlin.
I wrote with speech, that's okay. My name is Austin McLaughlin, and I am a former director of elections. I've served on elections committee last year, and I'm the only returning member who have served on elections committee this year. I resigned on Thursday before break because I witnessed bias in the process of handling not only the room's challenges, but Dale's. To be clear, I resigned after the proceedings and votes does not impact the opinions and votes of the election committee members that were sitting there. This Monday, I felt compelled to write an op-ed in the Sun after I saw the article come out that morning. I have no stake in this game. I'm a senior and a former DOE.
30 seconds.
I assumed a role last year during a tumultuous time, and I'm acting to do my part to ensure that democracy is protected while also holding our institutions in check. I was told by the Office of the Assemblies that the JCC was there to make a judgment on whether the process was biased, not the result. But the JCC ruled that there was bias, and the determination was struck down. The Elections Committee does not have the vested authority to deny the JCC's ruling. Currently, it is acting as the judge, the jury, and the executioner. The election committee had many opportunities to correct this egregious error in judgment. They did not. Because the independence and partiality of election.
One more minute, thanks.
Because the independence and impartiality of the election committee is paramount, I called the student assembly to release the vote of the SA presidential candidates and let democracy reign. Thank you.
I have a point of inquiry. This is to either one of you guys or the chair. I'm just wondering, if the promotional materials clause was applied as been claimed, wouldn't 19 of the 32 members of the who are running for a position have been disqualified because she was...
Once again, that's confidential information, and once again, the Elections Committee is not meant to police candidates.
not meant to please candidates. And I also want to follow up on that because I don't know how confidentiality factors in here. Maybe the JCC can touch on that.
The next speaker is going to be the elections committee, and after, yeah, so I mean, this can be addressed, so. Okay, thank you.
There is confidentiality mandated for the elections committee and the challenge candidates within the pool. It explicitly names parties that are bound to confidentiality, and the JCC wasn't one of them. However, the discussion of promotional materials isn't really relevant to this conversation whatsoever. It doesn't matter if he definitely put up promotional materials with the Cornell logo. That wasn't what I was determining. I was determining whether rules were applied in a fair manner. So maybe it fit the definition of promotional materials. I don't know. I didn't analyze that. I was analyzing how the committee failed to produce a report.
And Travis, the elections committee.
To address
this, it's their turn to talk. Are you actually?
Wait, so
if I think
they
can feel like that or Olivia. Travis, are you answering? Are you asking questions?
No, I would.
Huh? And the JCC answered it, right?
I have a point.
Oh, you have a point, okay.
Yeah. It sounds to me like
you see closer to the mic, the acoustics are terrible.
Sorry, it sounds to me like what was just said, and that they didn't look at whether or not he had actually broken the rules, and they still didn't broken the rules. So, wouldn't that still disqualify
you? Okay, so, yeah, so.
Excuse, we can.
Yeah, so, okay, so I'm gonna yield to Travis as a viewer.
I was gonna say the elections committee does rule if a candidate does break a rule. That is what the elections committee's job is. But the JCC is procedural bias, the actual procedures. And what the elections committee felt is that the document produced by the JCC was more than procedural bias. It was opinion, as I stated before, and as handled as that. So now to, I guess, address the resignation of the former committee member, Austin. The difference of this elections committee and every single elections committee before it is that you are your own elections committee. You are supposed to be interpreting the rules. We, throughout the process, we can rely on former interpretations, and many members of the previous elections committee have reached out to me to weigh in on personal opinion. And I did not share the contents of that with the current elections committee. Because that is biased, that is allowing another committee's voice to be heard about this process. These election rules are supposed to be interpreted by the people who wrote them in this process, and then now are ruling on how their interpretation is supposed to be met. That is just the job of the actual committee. And then to also address the bias of what is felt right now from Austin is the leak of personal information that jeopardizes committee members, where we are bound by confidentiality, and while we are going beyond that to show the transparency of the elections committee. Once again, showing that information prior to our chance to respond allows a conversation to be started. We are no longer trying to see who's right and who's wrong, but now it's, can the elections committee prove that they are correct or someone else's opinion that has already swayed the public? The amount of leakage, the amount of precedent that this election has set is insurmountable. It is so large, half of these processes have never been touched before. And to now see how conversations that are held in confidentiality are no longer sacred because someone hears something that they disagree with is egregious by all means, especially as a former director of elections. We are upheld to the highest of standards as it states in the election rule. And that is what we are supposed to abide by. It is a code. And that is what the elections committee feels that they did do in this process. Because if someone did feel biased, there are numerous opportunities to voice that you feel bias has existed. Because to resign after a decision does not rule in your favor surmounts to bias. That is not showing that you interpreted the rules, but it's showing you had a personal opinion. And because you were not the sole voice in that room, that is bias by definition. Because you did not have final say.
Okay, Yeah, so Austin's name was invoked directly, so he's going to have a chance to reply.
Yes.
Okay. So I'm just going to chat real quick. Austin has a right of reply because he feels that he was attacked personally by what Trump said. Additionally, point of information, so point of inquiries, or whatever you want to call them, go directly to the chair, but the chair has the ability to yield the floor to an individual or a set of individuals. So that's it.
So Austin.
I guess. So I think I mostly want to comment on the confidentiality question because I feel like confidentiality has been thrown out as a mechanism for censorship. Over the course of the past few weeks, people that have been involved in this process have threatened with JAs. I think that's not right. That's a chilling effect on speech. That's unlikely wrong. And I think that we really need to address this question of confidentiality and really reflect that. When there is wrongdoing, there should be a whistleblower. That is what I did when I resigned. I'm sorry if I know I probably broke friendships over that. The reality is, I saw something that was wrong and I acted. I hope you can all appreciate that. Thank you.
The next will be the JCC and Gabe. 2 minutes.
I first want to start by saying Gabe and I don't have the same opinions about these, so sharing time with him, share opinions, apparently. No offense to Gabe. I first want to say Austin was irrelevant to my analysis. I didn't talk to him. He wasn't part of my review of whether the rules were implemented in a biased way. So I have no opinion on him or his confidentiality. Additionally, the Elections Committee is supposed to interpret rules, so I'm absolutely correct in that. However, Article 2B5 indicates that the Elections Committee has no power to overrule the election rules under any circumstances. So to take a plain reading of the rules and stretch it to the point of breaking to fit their goals of making a final determination is essentially overruling the rules. Additionally, my opinions throughout my report are because of my analysis of the reports from the committee that were provided to me by the Office of the Assembly. Maroon has submitted a one-sentence brief saying, I think there was bias against me in the procedural aspects of this election. I still probably would have found bias because I was given two reports that were 5 sentences each. There is no way that fulfills Section E7, Article 2, for a complete written report about the procedural aspects of the first disqualification and the reconsideration. The Election Committee's inability to follow the election rules biased the way Maroon was able to access a JCC review, and that in and of itself should qualify to overturn the Election Committee's opinion. Anything we say tonight can't remedy that they made insufficient reports initially when they had the opportunity to fully express their opinion.
I just kind of want to expound on that. Basically, the thing that was lacking in the reports was any reason. There was no reason given. It was just Maroon is a candidate, he broke the rule, this is the rule. I've seen the reports. What do you mean? I've seen the reports. I've seen the reports. I mean, are you saying that's
wrong? Jim, continue with your address.
Look, if you're going to use confidentiality as if you're going to weaponize confidentiality, then you're proving that you didn't do the rule, you broke the rules. That's
10 seconds.
The confidentiality is not your weapon, it is supposed to be a shield. When you break the rules, use confidentiality to pretend you didn't break the rules. That's not how this works.
Thank you. Next is Becca.
So my concern with the decision that the election can be made wasn't due to whether or not it was stupid, the whole logo, or whether any other kind of rules. It's clearly just a bias. Just because, you want to know, yourself included, being on an executive board that supported the other candidate and other people on the elections committee who didn't choose to recuse themselves on the vote, who were on e-boards of organizations that publicly supported one of the two candidates. And as the DOB doesn't responsibility to let them know that that is some sort of bias and they should recuse themselves from the vote so that the vote would be unbiased. It wasn't just
One member.
13 seconds.
Yeah, so I'll definitely yield now that the committee member's up here, but I first want to address the contents of the reports. There was never once any question raised throughout this process of the contents of the reports by any person. That is from the fall elections to the spring. Never once has anyone said these reports are unclear. Every single time, a candidate has always found time to respond, points of clarification, address, anything regarding that. Never once has there ever been any form. In addition, there are multiple reports found within the Office of Assemblies. And every single year, they differ in length, in structure, in style. That is to show that there is some autonomy in the Elections Committee to produce a report that they find valid. And to next address the binding of confidentiality as a shield, as opposed to a shield. Confidentiality also exists to protect the students that are using it, to have true conversations and to know that public opinion will not sway them. Throughout this process, as you can see from the Cornell meeting page, that there have been direct verbal accusations raised against candidates, against me, and I did respond back. But that is to show that reaching this during now, like I said, it changes the playing field. We will share all documents, our findings, all of that, but give the Elections Committee time. Once again, these accusations, they're shown because one person chose to release information. It's not hiding behind confidentiality, but it's saying give a committee a chance to respond when multiple people are raising accusations against them. Accusations have been raised prior to even the start of the election about the job that I am doing as an individual. And to me, that is biased because one of those individuals is sitting next to me right now. That's to me is biased, that those comments can still be made, and then now you find procedural bias because I did not do something that you like. That to me feels not only like bias, but a personal attack.
Next is Jacob Rebecca. Let's just finish next after the meeting. So, disregard that.
Feels like the word confidentiality has been brought up a lot here. I have a question that I'd like to follow up on. Who makes that confidentiality? It's my understanding that it's because of the elections rules that are voted. And have been voted on in their relatively current form since 2009, as it says on the top of the sheet, that those things are confidential. Michelle Horvath is not going to come down here and beat you up if you decide to make these unconfidential. We have one side that, yes, has decided that they are not subject to that confidentiality and that they're going to release their report. How are we supposed to have an open, transparent argument when half of the things that we're discussing are held in secret, right? You know, Travis, you want to break the confidentiality agreement? You know, why does it ever break the confidentiality agreements and put everything out in the open? This is a public election. You guys should be far more transparent than you're being right now.
Thank you. Yes.
Who has the right to decide whether or not things are confidential?
So that's a very ambiguous.
Who has the right to decide whether or not the anything discussed in the Elections Committee challenge hearings is confidential?
The Director of Elections when it pertains to elections. Okay, the next is the Elections Committee.
Can I just say what's the right?
The Elections Committee to you.
So Travis brought up the point that you're trying to review that these aren't sufficient to explain that they're going to be in the election. And the election committee needed to produce a report that was sufficient to explain their procedures. By not doing so, I personally find analysis of the documents. I personally reviewed the documents. And I didn't know Travis before right now when we had a table. I don't have any bias against the job he's done. It's simply in this instance of conduct of the Elections Committee after my review was not sufficient to uphold the totality of procedural protections that were given to her in the election rules. And the election rules, plain reading of them without overruling the election rules unilaterally, is that the JCC has the power to overturn the decision if the final decision, if bias is found. And I'm going to make
one more.
thank you for joining us.
So I would just like to say for the record, given the current situation, it's not the tax you burden. You should not be like involved or making those kinds of comments or questions, given that it's an open discussion for the community and given the current situation. So I'd recommend that be strict for the record and to not entertain those kinds of questions.
Yes. Did you see us in the room? No, she had a prior engagement. She let us know prior that she had to be in that situation. Yeah. Okay, so, all right, let's just committee.
In that final vote, in the vote that is in the documents, members accused themselves of it. I can speak for myself in saying that when my organization, the Lindy Library, decided to endorse Dale, I did not take part in that vote at all. Okay? I can't necessarily speak for the other members, but from my knowledge, that is what they did. Speaking to the documents and being sufficient enough, every candidate that was challenged and was disqualified because of that challenge received a report of the same type of substance. No other candidate has found an issue with that report. As Travis stated, there is no precedent for lengths, sizes, content, anything of it.
There's a woman at left that if you want to go to the next speaker. Okay. Yeah. Wait, did you want to speak?
Oh,
she
just wanted to speak.
She so she to the JCC school counterpart, but those two. Yeah. Yes. So but you do have the election committee does have 1 more minute if you want to utilize it.
And just to say, like, I just really want to reiterate again, like, the point of confidentiality in the sense is just so that students who are deciding amongst about their peers are able to have a whole conversation that they just feel is a safe space on this campus. If that's not protected in the space on this campus, I don't know where they can go to have that conversation, where every student in almost every single organization is connected in some regard. And once again, to address it, candidates that needed to excuse themselves according to the interpretation of the elections committee did in every single instance that is indicated in the election committee reports. And to say that right now that they shouldn't have is your also your personal interpretations of the rules. And that is just as if this is the elections committee, but except they are empowered to interpret the rules as opposed to individuals. Everyone does have an opinion in regards to it. And once again, these are rules that you voted on. And the candidates always have time for points of clarification. That's why you have a mandatory campaign. And every candidate is required, and it's mandatory to attend.
Okay. So I want to address two like false claims that came up. So like one, it's untrue that candidate, like all the candidates who were supposed to recuse themselves did recuse themselves. The reason that that is untrue is because, like as I have said multiple times, candidates who were on the e-boards of organizations that endorsed one of the candidates disqualified one of the other candidates, thereby like making that person the victim. That's what involvement is. What do you mean? Which leads me to my second point. So the second point is that it specifically says in the election rules at the bottom, it's like literally like the third thing from the bottom. Members of the committee and parties to a challenge may not share the contents of challenges, evidence, or decisions submitted to or received from the committee, except when explicitly permitted by these rules or by the Director of Elections. So my question is, may I share? So you'll permit me to, or you'll like the question is, you can absolve anyone from their confidentiality requirement. The fact that you were choosing not to do that to prevent us from knowing whether or not certain people were involved in the decision. Like, here's the question, right? So, were Terrell, Travis, Clayton, and Lucy involved in decisions regarding fruit? That is just a question that I have for you right now. You can cite confidentiality, but you have the power to lift it right now. It's a
question. This is next.
acts as a senator. To rouse opposition, so
Travis.
Travis is the director, so he was leading.
Terrell, Clady, and Lucy, we all recused ourselves in the votes involving the endorsed candidate, which was Dale Barber.
Yes.
He just said in room.
Okay, we're going to go to the. We're going to go back to speakers. Okay, do not. Please do not interrupt. There's a long speech. Everyone has a speech to say, okay? Next is Sarah Park.
All right. I just think we should clarify that this discussion should only be about whether or not the JCC's decision that the election committee made by its decision should be valid. I don't think the refusal matters because she didn't say that. Like, we might personally think that that decision was biased, and like, so, like clearly so does Austin. I think that's significant. But like, the only thing that we should be doing is reviewing the JCC's decision, which I think at this point now we don't have enough information. She said there were four reasons or four citations of bias. She explained one of them, and I think we're going to need all of them in order to have a like full discussion. But regarding that one specific one, I think a lack of detail in the report might be significant, but if the election committee is going to release information and going to release the report eventually, I think that's information that we need in order to make an effective decision.
Okay, just as noted in advance, I'm going to end this discussion at 6:30, that's in 7 minutes, okay, because that's when the essay meeting ends. We can extend the meeting to discuss other business, but this is, please note that this is new business. So the formal vote will be next week anyways, unless there's a vote to turn this into business of the day. Next is Eli Warning.
Motion to extend by 10 minutes, because this discussion is really important.
Where does the second? All right, I'm going to recognize that, but just know that next week we'll also have this opportunity. Okay. Eli?
Thanks for letting me speak. I'll try to keep it short. I would like to suggest that this university may suffer from a logo fetishism which manifests in more pressing matters than this election. What does a Cornell logo really mean, and who does it belong to? To me, it represents one of the world's foremost universities, which happens to be embedded in my home community. Cornell should be defined by the individuals and communities it's made up of and serves. It is therefore that in that logo I see many shortcomings when a campus is in crisis over its use in a meme. Meanwhile, that logo is gleefully used to represent blatant contradictions of an administration that refuses to divest from fossil fuels or Puerto Rican debt, or is used to boast our blurred values pertaining to diversity and inclusion. The Cornell logo embodies an identity crisis within a university which falls short of embodying its values within the larger communities it belongs to. I wish to bring attention to an issue which may present opportunity for meaningful action as I understand it. I believe I bear no false premises when I share that Cornell dining workers must throw away individually prepared packaged foods, which bear a university label. Please.
Wait one more moment.
Thank you. I'll be quick. Cornell dining workers must throw away individually prepared packaged foods, which bear university labeling, as soon as they pass their self-ID. By this, I mean that people are unable to take it upon themselves to distribute unspoiled, valuable, and nutritious foods to help feed their families or communities, and there's no system for doing so. I have a close family friend who says he risks his job by feeding hungry stomachs with day-old food. What I dare fear is that Cornell's food branding is an expression of the same perceived elite status as we sit on our proverbial hill. My larger point is to ask, what is this symbol being saved for? Here's an opportunity for meaningfully addressing food security and boasting that logo. I'm not ignorant of the importance of copyright, and in this case of this election, misleading endorsements, but I firmly believe the Cornell logo belongs embedded in our larger culture and community. I plan to follow up, and I hope that genuine thought is given.
Thank you.
Thank
you. Who is that? Who is that? All right, so here's the thing. So to move this to this today, we need 2/3 vote. 60 is to be amended to 60%. But we can do that, but we change the rules so that it'd be harder to do that for a reason. Yeah, but it is doable if you guys want to continue. 60%. Do you maintain the motion? All right, we'll go. We already heard of the sentence. All right, we'll go into voting. A vote to this is a day. All right, all those in favor of moving this to business of the day. Are those against? Abstentions? Okay. All right, then that's 11-9-2. It stays and new business. We'll continue with the speakers list. Elections committee, you have 2 minutes.
I guess like one thing I just want to address is the direct scrutiny that this committee has faced because of they followed their procedure as written. I've never seen any other election be called this much into question, any other director of election be this much talked about. I just don't know how to explain how. Following meetings, members of my committee who aren't even present, who may be called in due to a close meeting spirit, are referred to as angry people of color. And so I just want to say once again that this committee has been under immense scrutiny, yet we have not been given a chance to really speak on the issue. And once again, because information is never coming out on a clear playing field, once again, this feels as if it's a direct attack. This doesn't feel like a conversation. This resolution, we're no longer talking about it. We're talking about the business of the election and yielding every 2 minutes back, whatever so often, whatever the petition is now. Between A is not A. That is not the process right now. We're talking about the election process. That's why the election members of the election committee. That's someone who submitted a resolution knowing that certain people would not be here. That was the presumption when this was created. That was the presumption when original things were called into question. Knowing that my absence, my presence would not be here this day, and I sacrificed to be here as a public servant to make sure that the voice of this community is represented because other members can also not be here in space. So I just want to very much reiterate that, and no other director of elections or the committee members ever been placed under this much public scrutiny. And it saddens me to see that today, very much so.
I do want to just make one point. It is a fair point that this resolution was introduced, when there was knowledge that you wouldn't be here, right? But Gabe can speak for himself, but I do want to also point out that people have been waiting weeks to get the results for the students in the president, please, and not just for the other races. So I don't think it's fair to say that there was malicious intent behind the timing of this.
I would say because accusations have been raised prior throughout the election process about if I made a decision that this other candidate has to be disqualified or this has to happen, when that is just not factual. That is frightening the director of elections.
Okay, Gabe, you're next.
Okay. So, I mean, I'll try to be brief. Like, essentially, the problem is the elections committee broke the rules. Like that objectively happened. They broke the rules. The reason you're getting a lot of public scrutiny is because you broke the rules, we got overturned, and then you ignored getting overturned. Like, that's never happened before. So, of course, you're going to get more public scrutiny. Yeah, so like what happened is the elections committee didn't follow its election procedures. It created invalid election results, thereby doing that. And because it did that, I think the student assembly needs to act quickly to rectify the situation. Like thousands of people voted in our elections. Like thank God that we even get that many. I think it's kind of bad that like someone might get disqualified over a meme, but I think it's like a lot worse that like the rules were not followed. And then the committee that broke its own rules is assuming the authority to tell us when it broke its own rules. Like, that's crazy, guys. Like, that makes no sense. Well, man, that is not essential. It's a passive voice. It's the passive voice. But you wouldn't supply the very thing that's getting overturned as the subject. In no world does that make sense. I can't do it. I don't think the essay meant to write that. Yes, the rules suck, but like honestly, they didn't. Like
the JCC's decision stands. I think the student assembly needs to recognize it as valid and let the result out.
Motion to those of the dissent? Did you dissent? Okay, so the dissent said what about?
Wait, can I elaborate?
Yes, you can.
So the problem is, knowing that the confidentiality statement was broken, they shouldn't have a chance to elaborate with full disclosure, which they haven't had the opportunity to do so yet. So we shouldn't be voting on this now. We should be voting once we have all the details on the website.
Yes.
Okay.
We're going to
vote to voting. All those in favor?
We're voting on
the we're voting to move this to business of the day.
This is either the resolution or this is the resolution, right?
All those against? Can you raise your hands higher, please? Abstentions? 11, 8 to 3 does not continue business of the day. So we have 7 minutes more in this discussion. The next person to speak is Chris.
Okay, so there's a couple things I want to say. First of all, like the racism, the public slander that Travis had faced, that is completely unjustified. That should not happen. That is bad, okay? That is entirely separate from the issues that we're discussing. Obviously not, but it's not relevant to whether or not they actually broke the rules, but it's not relevant to them. It's separate. Secondly, people have talked about like how people sometimes don't apply the rules, like sometimes they actually say don't, like, rules don't matter except when they matter. Like, if the store gets broken into, no one sees that, you don't report it, it's still a crime because you didn't report it, so like, it doesn't matter. It's not going to be tried. So like, it really matters when things are tried. I think I also want to talk about what you can accept. You can accept that the violation is completely valid, that Veru broke the rules. You can even accept that the JCC does not have the time to see you. The issue to be discussed here is whether or not the elections committee followed the rules in their entirety. If they broke any of the rules in coming to the decision convicting Veru, then the decision is invalid. That is the only thing we're deciding. You're like, well, did the elections committee follow the rules? And that's what confidentiality is problematic, because we have partial information now. Partial confidentiality has already been broken. I think it's in the interest of the elections committee to release all the information that we can.
I'm not going to recognize that because we have so many people and so little.
Okay, we just need all the information.
You finish your sentence, right? You can't submit your members. Next is Nick. Oh, Nick Burrows.
Second.
So that means half an hour and like from 6:40. So that means 7:10. Okay. Right. That grows. You dissent? Okay, this ends.
So I have a next meeting.
Give what?
I already withdrawn my
call. Okay, that grows.
Just a really quick question, and I think that we can all agree that we've been frustrated with like personal attacks that have come from our reporting, so I think everyone would agree that minimize that, that would obviously be a deal. Just one question I have about the actual votes themselves. Have the votes in the presidential race been destroyed at this point? Because I know that they would be, and this might be a good question, I'm not sure who knows, but I'm just curious if the votes even exist anymore.
Yeah. Wait, can you repeat your question? You asked if the votes
in the presidential race? Do they exist anymore?
So we don't know that. It's Gina from the Office of Assemblies has that answer. Travis, you want to answer? So Gina's not here right now.
I think this. I know this is like more of a procedural thing. You don't want to hear my voice, but I think it's appropriate for something like this. The JCC requested a stay on the destruction of any material until this conflict was resolved.
So it's not been destroyed. Okay, next is elections committee 2 minutes.
First thing that I want to state is I really want to echo the words that a lot of people have said, that no one is operating off of the whole entire
entirety of the information that is there, okay? It's not all ours, but it will be put out. We understand this issue of confidentiality. But the thing is that the elections committee operated with the highest integrity and due diligence in making all decisions, okay? I can promise you that I speak on behalf of myself and the elections committee was saying that. So once you have the full information, only at that point will you fully be able to make a sound decision as to whether or not we violate any of our own rules.
Point of inquiry, does the elections committee, in your capacity as president, does the elections committee have full information ready to be released right now?
That's up to the elections
Can you yield?
Yes.
If it's up to the elections committee, no.
Point of inquiry, why is that?
Because all of the full members are not here at this time. So we'd like to have everybody here where they are able to speak for themselves.
Point of inquiry, where's the staff report supposed to be already prepared?
The report is prepared. The report was sent to the candidate. There is justification of why the committee did not find bias in their evaluation of the election rules and why they disagreed with the JCC report. That was sent to the candidate, and that does exist, but the committee wants to create an entire document that documents the entire process in regards to this, because that is what's being called into question.
Next is Gabe.
Okay, so I have two questions. So one, if the candidate were to share the information, would you refer him to the judicial administrator? Yes or no? No, you wouldn't. So it's, I can share it. Yeah, so I'm asking you, as the director of elections, if the candidate publicly released the report that you sent him, would you refer him to the judicial administrator? Yes or no?
Yeah, you ask the question, if he has a right to respond.
I would say no, but I think the entire validity of this election should be called into question. That document is what the committee sent to a candidate who has been with us every step of the way. And that is something that cannot be denied. From every hearing, every email, they are aware entirely of the process. And if they truly wanted to do it, they could, and I would not stop them. But I think it would be in the poorest of taste to reveal that document at this time, and not allowing, once again, the elections committee to have a fair playing field, to have a community discussion, because once again, this does not feel in that manner.
Yeah. Point of information, is the only violation that you found in the actual campaigning from the number 5 under promotional materials in the elections rules, was that the sole violation? Okay.
Like, can you read it?
Oh, sorry, were there multiple violations?
Like,
were there multiple violations of the campaign rules, or was it just the one that's under promotional materials, number 5, no Cornell insignia or logos?
To my knowledge, yes, that's the only one. But okay, thank you. Elections committee, you could answer if you think differently.
The rule that came in question was disqualified for was the rule that stipulates that no Cornell logo consignments allowed on any promotional materials.
Thank you.
All right, Dave, you have 1 minute left.
Yeah, okay, so like I just want to like clarify again, like you're misinterpreting that rule. It will clearly only applies to materials provided by the Office of the Assemblies. I don't know why you refuse to use context, but that's neither here nor there. The real problem is that you broke your rules over and over and over again. And because you did that, we're going to have to overturn you. That's the way I see it, and I really hope the students understand. So, which leads me to the next point. The next point is, if it's true that you will not refer the candidate to the judicial administrator, then my question is, would you, like, did you tell the candidate that if he released the information, you would refer him to the judicial administrator?
30 seconds.
That is a personal decision if I did refer, and I wouldn't. But we send the same information in regards to confidentiality to all candidates, making very aware that you can be sent to the judicial administrator. It's not an automatic process. It's not as if confidentiality breaks, stuff gets sent. The JA just does that. That's just how it works. The form still has to be filed.
5 seconds. Okay. Shivani, jump up.
Yeah. If you could please read out loud like the list of community members and SA members that are on the list, that would be really appreciated. And then the second thing is, I just think that considering whatever that list is, once you read it, that there's a lot of us that do want to speak both on the assembly and the community, and giving such a significant period of time for a discussion with already only 25 minutes left to the folks that are at the table. While I do understand that they have a lot to say, it would be beneficial if we could change the allocation of time. So that
so you're requesting that more time to give to SA community members that are here?
Yes.
Okay. And then,
I've also to move to the common model of having like two community members, one SA member each 1 minute, and then giving them 2 minutes to respond.
Yes.
Yes,
I'd be giving that first.
Yeah, sure. So we're currently under the SA list, we have TJ, Daniel Engelson, Natalia, Evan, Lee, Myra, Ian, Ray, Savannah, Ashwin, and Juju.
What? Point of inquiry,
I just don't understand when I feel like these are general responses that Gabe is giving, as valid as he is in having his opinion, that why, because, like, I understand the resolution being submitted, but I think that's strongly taking away from time. The elections committee can respond. I just don't understand why he's giving the same amount of time as us when we're talking right now really about the election process in general. It's not pertaining to this resolution.
So what do you say?
No, like giving up the 2 minutes, I just don't think that's being productive to the conversation.
So you agree with Shivani? You want to?
Yeah, so essentially what I'm asking for is that if the
assembly. Okay, I got it, okay. Right, let me just finish reading this, okay? Under community, we have John Dominguez is next, Mark, Haley Brace, Jacob Yamba. And that's it. Okay, so as far as allocation of the time, okay, I'm gonna do two SA members, two committee members, and then the election committee and Gabe, because there's bound to be questions that come up, right? And they have to answer. So, yeah, so it is a lot of people, but I'm sure they're capable of remembering the questions. I'm gonna go to TJ. 1 minute each.
So I don't know if this question is necessarily directed to. I don't know if it's Travis, I don't know who has the most experience or be able to answer this question, but the resolution that Gabe has introduced today and has been approved for new business would open up the election results, raw election results, and would ignore elections committee's decision. But even if elections committee was biased in their decision, isn't it possible? And I'm not saying that that's necessarily true. I'm saying if elections committee was biased in the decision, isn't it possible that the disqualification is still valid, even if there were a totally different set of people on elections committee? But the disqualification of the room or breaking the student
15 seconds
is still valid. And I think in that case, I don't know that it is possible to have an unbiased situation at this point. But I'm just kind of curious how that plays out. And I love Ruby and Dale both. Thanks.
Okay, please remember that question. Next is Daniel Engelson.
Okay, so firstly, I don't think any sort of memes or any sort of social media that's been attacking anyone is fair. This whole thing started with memes, and memes have gone too far, and I think that there's some cool people on this campus. But it doesn't change the reason why I asked which criteria you use to violate the rune. I think the baseline of it is that it is ambiguous whether or not the meme actually was a violation of that, because it does specify that promotional materials are printed materials. So the fact that there is a meme and that is what disqualified him, in a sense, is what should overturn the decision regardless of bias.
Okay, next is John Dominguez.
I have 1 minute.
You have 1 minute. I'll give you 15, I'll give you a little more warning.
Before I start, I just want to say my name, John Dominguez, incoming ILR representative. So, all right. I think it's silly to invalidate the voice of the student body for being hosted by a third party. I think we have to take these things into context. The crime has to fit the punishment. And I think DQ is somebody over a meme is inappropriate. Number two, judicial precedent. Mr. Travis has recognized that there's an importance of precedent in making these decisions. And I think we're lowering the bar for disqualification. If we disqualify a person from over a third-party meme post, we are making a judicial precedent that lowers the bar, and therefore a lot of other candidates can be disqualified for such petty material. Mr. Travis challenges the legitimacy of the essay's authority to overturn the decision. But this is like saying the United States Congress can't overturn a decision by the Federal Elections Committee. I think it's very silly to say that essay doesn't have the authority to overturn a decision. Mr. Travis points out that the essay has voted on these rules, but there was no exigency to change these rules. The essay could not anticipate this.
5 seconds.
Lastly, the JCC is the most objective individual. She's a law student. And just like in the law, she's an appellate in this case. The JCC is an appellate, and lower courts cannot refuse a higher decision.
Thank you. Okay. Next is Mark.
I just think that was such a dehumanizing statement. I would think consistently referring to me as Mr. Travis as if I'm no longer a human being. I would just say there is a lot of value to what the elections committee has went through just to get to this process. I don't understand how you think outside opinion and opinions coming out don't potentially impact the elections committee just as a body within itself because of that breach. And then just also say this about, TJ, just repeat your question just real quick because I feel like it was on to that.
All right, Travis, you can ask that question after Mark speaks, okay?
I just feel like that was very much a dehumanizing response, very aggressive in nature, and I really wish these assembly would have spoken up to not allow someone to refer to me in that. Thank you.
Mark.
Thank you, Travis. I just want to open this to the question. What happened to democracy? Because right now, it doesn't look like we have that. The outcome should be as simple as counting who had the most votes. The fate of this presidential election apparently stems from the hands of a rogue student who's fabricating promotional material of her own volition. Someone who has no affiliation with the room. Someone who may not.
Wait, that's refrain from her.
All right, just to clarify, the individual that published the meme was a member of, like, was a supporter. Wasn't necessarily a rogue student. I'm gonna put that out there. It's not a good faith. She was part of the team, yeah.
Okay, please. All right, thanks. You can continue. You have 30 seconds left.
Ambiguous rules and bias in society. I think I speak for many people when asked that we just follow through with a fair election and with the result of the side votes.
Thank you. I'll let you speak for 2 minutes.
Thank you.
Just a few different matters to address. There's so many questions.
Daniel Anderson?
Yeah.
Daniel? You did not have a question. Did you have a question for the election committee?
Yeah. Oh, sorry. What I was asking was, is there a chance that it is ambiguous that that group broke that rule because it does state promotional printed materials in that section that you used as his violation?
No, it's not ambiguous because, in fact, it talks about the name logo and artwork copying.
Are you speaking to the mic?
It talks about the Cornell logo and city name in multiple places throughout the rules. And in addition to that, it also says that candidates and supporters acting on their behalf must be aware of and comply with the local election rules.
Yeah, but what I was asking is, when you said violation to disqualify him, when I asked for climate increase, that the only one criteria you used was that one criteria where it wasn't ambiguous if a Facebook post would be considered part of that promotional materials category.
Not all promotional materials come from the Office of the Assemblies. This applies to promotional materials.
1 minute.
at least that is the elections committee's interpretation of that.
But that was the
interpretation. Point of order. I just wanted to.
They're in the middle of speaking.
But if there's like a ridiculous amount of crosstalk and it's not democratic for the people that have been sitting here for 2 hours,
So the reason why that was appropriate in this case is because Travis was asking what Daniel was. He wanted to answer Daniel's questions. Okay, so that's fair. Okay, you have 30 seconds remaining.
Just to say, can the elections committee maybe have just 30 seconds after each question, just because I really think it's really improper not to answer people's questions, and if we don't have a response, we can always just say we don't have one. I really just want to make sure that people's questions are answered, because this process is very confusing.
That's very fair. This is a very unconventional way to go about it. Okay, Gabe, you have your turn.
I'm going to answer your question, and I'm going to refer to mine. Okay, so it could be the case that the elections committee, like even if the elections committee wasn't biased, that you know it still would have been a disqualification. But like the problem is the elections committee, like it not only was biased, and not only is biased like against its election rules, but it also like violated a bunch of other rules when it made its decisions. So it is never the case that like an upper court can like let a lower court like violate a bunch of rules like not allow due process to take place, and then be like, well, you know, you can overturn me. Like, that just doesn't happen, and that makes no sense. So, like, to answer your question, like, not being, no, they can't. Like, if, like, not only they were both biased, and they broke a bunch of rules, they had to get overturned, they didn't. That was the rule.
So, holding bias aside, we need to discuss the ways in which elections committee procedurally did not follow all of the rules if we're going to have a conversation about the elections committee rules. I just want to reiterate that the director of elections has the power to make everything public, and everything should be made public as soon as possible. Something we haven't spoken about is procedural irregularities that elections committee has committed. In the rules, the elections committee has to have a total of 2 votes when making a decision on a challenge. One, a simple majority vote set about whether or not a person broke the rules, and second, whether or not it constituted a substantial advantage and a substantial effect on the election by a 2/3 vote to disqualify. On the reports, I believe there was only 1 vote, and I just want to ask, which of the 2 was it? And yes, I've seen it. I know it's confidential, but I saw it. Also, if we're talking about expectations, there were no voting booths during the election period, and that is something that is stated.
15 seconds. Okay. Just to reorient the conversation, this conversation is based off of the resolution that's been introduced, which is whether the JCC has authority to overturn the election committee's decision, and like, regard the process, right? It's not about whether Viruf broke the rules or not, okay? Otherwise, Viruf has a right to chime in, because he's right here. Yeah, so next, he's a defendant, yes. Next is Natalia. You have 1 minute.
Hi, this is a quick comment I wanted to make at the beginning, but the speakersness has been particularly slow to me. This body has been previously criticized for lack of professionalism, lack of respect, and lack of basic human decency. This is literally why no one takes this seriously. We all know each other on this body. We have all worked with each other, regardless of what campaign we're rooting for. Remember that we're people first. This is the student assembly body at a university. We're not the United States Congress. This is not a hearing. We are not here to cross-examine anyone. We all want the same outcome, which is a fair re-election. With that said, can we please discuss the question at hand to whether or not we would like to overturn this decision? Thank you.
All right, next is Evan.
So I do not think that we need all of the information to make this decision today. One instance of bias from the election committee in order to make this decision, and I believe that we have that. I'm aware that you have said that reports of similar style past all the disqualified candidates have been sufficient. But right now, you didn't think it was. He appealed, and the JCC.
Incorrect. That impression, you get to 30 seconds.
You really didn't think it was. He appealed to the JCC, and the JCC agreed with him and it said that the committee was biased. Matthew Tagliabue spoke at the beginning of this meeting today saying that they adopted these election rules, the ones that we continue to vote on every year, that the JCC has the final authority on this decision. This is something that we need to overturn today.
Travis, did you want to respond to that?
Yes.
You have strictly 30 seconds, okay?
Okay. And I'm speaking right now as the director of elections and the staff of the elections committee. And this is something that I feel in regards to, that you don't have that instance in the report. That was never raised to the elections committee. That was ever felt, just to really state that for the record. Never once brought up. So how can we fix something that has never been stated? How can we do that? We submitted a report that does not list size, length, or any criteria. Never once stated by any candidate during my time. And second of all, just to show that this election is going to
be 30 seconds. Next is Billy Grace. I'll follow up. Haley Grace. Can someone give her a mic?
Hi, so as a community member who had struck votes during the elections, I wasn't super involved, but now I am because it's very interesting. My perspective is that during this meeting, I've heard said a lot that the meat is relevant, the procedural bias, if it exists, is what's relevant. And as a community member watching this, it does seem to me like the meat is relevant because any person from the outside who's not looking only at a meat with that logo, but that specific meat and how it was used, I think it's pretty clear that that wasn't rigging the election or giving is such an unfair advantage as like would constitute a disqualification. So I think that's why people are so skeptical of the committee results, is because it just doesn't make common sense to us. And so on top of the JCC saying that she found bias, it just seems, it doesn't look good. And so while I believe that you guys tried to do it right in the moment, I don't know you, and I don't think that you did something malicious at all. I just want you guys to be held accountable by a third party who isn't you. I don't want to hear from you guys when you're doing anything that would be really great.
Next is Jacob Youngblood.
No, I just wanted to ask, the election committee said that they would release the documents to share their point of view and how they reached their decision. When people looking for our community expect those documents to have, you said you felt attacked by the general community before. Did you have the ability to make those documents more confidential? Why haven't done so earlier?
To be clear, I have not felt attacked by the general community. I felt attacked by the system. Members have outwardly said the committee is filled with randoms, people that they confirm themselves, as well as I have been personally attacked by threatening my removal throughout this process. That's what I was referring to, not the criminal community. But the people that you've elected to be your representatives have shown bias towards the director of elections that sits with them every single week.
The barbell, we got checklists. Oh, not yet, but we got checklists. Travis, yeah, 2 minutes.
Okay. And this is what I wanted to say earlier. And this is something separate about the elections committee, because at the end of the day, they're the voting members. And this is just how I personally would say, the moment I found out about the resolution, I really don't personally care of the outcome, regardless of who wins, because I sit with both of them every single week. Both of them throughout this process have made, not this process, but throughout their tenure on the assembly, have made great decisions that I can agree with, and some have made decisions that I can't say. But both people have done that. What I really care about is the idea that people are saying that this committee is biased, and that is why I disagree with this report, and that is why I disagree with this resolution. I have no problem with going by the vote if people want to rely on the institution of democracy. Something was provided in front of us, and we ruled upon it, and we have no care of the actual outcome. What does matter and back to us is the idea of bias. Well, and I say that I really do mean me. But if people want to release the results, I have no problem with that. I stand by the elections committee's decision because I see how much time they put in to evaluate every decision. But as I said, we really do not, I do not believe that we committed any form of bias throughout this process. I really want to reiterate that, and that is why strongly I stand against this resolution. But if people want the democratic vote, we can't have it. And once again, I'm speaking as me, and not as a part of the committee in that regard.
You have 30 seconds left.
Okay, want to say that, to those points, all of the information is not out there, but it can be put out there, and then when it does, I feel as though that is the appropriate time to rule on this information. Because it's not all out there, the JCC was not operating under the full scope of the information. So that's why her report came back stating that we acted in a biased manner. We weren't acting with any bias.
That's a Gabe, 2 minutes.
So I have a question, and that is, according to you, like, who has the ability to determine if the elections committee is biased? No, I'm asking, like, according to you, who is the authority to do it?
Yeah, feel free.
The authority to make an opinion on whether or not the elections committee was biased.
Why would that happen?
Because the JCC she's not operating under all of the information that was necessary to make such an argument. Point of inquiry, what information would the JCC need from elections committee to make her decision not biased?
So the Office of Assemblies gave both the defendants information as well as the elections committee's
This is not a court.
Okay. Arun's documents as well as elections committee's documents have been given to the JCC by Gina, the Office of Assemblies.
Just to specify what those documents are, the documents that were provided by Arun are specifically documents that outline what he believes are bias. The documents submitted by the elections committee are all documents that Arun has had the entire time through the challenge reports. They have not allowed the elections committee to address the bias, and that's what the elections committee did when making the decision. And in addition, just to say, the elections committee does have finality of the decision, but if the JCC does have final decision, we would have ruled that way. Our interpretation, as well as what was reinforced prior to us, was saying that we had final say.
Okay.
And that was what we operated.
This still gives time. Yes, 1 minute left.
So you just said that if the rules had said that the JCC had the final say, then you would have ruled that the JCC had the final say. You get the problem here. Like, you don't get to determine if the JCC has the final say.
Like, that's...
Let me try this again. So, who do you believe has the final say, or who do you believe has the ability to determine if the elections committee interpreted own rules and applied them with bias?
I believe under the current election rules, the process is biased. It allows one person to voice what they feel is biased and gives the other side no other chance to address it. But if both parties have a chance to respond, then yes, the JCC can, but that is not the case in this
case. 30 seconds left.
Well, it's games, right?
So basically your point is that the rules themselves are biased. Okay, the rules we voted on are biased. Okay, it also says in the elections rules that under no circumstances does the elections committee have the ability to overturn the elections. So just because you don't like the rules doesn't mean you get to overturn them. You just said we don't like the rules. They're biased. You just said
that. All right, so please don't interrupt the speaker.
The process is
all right, Gabe, your turn is done. Next is me.
I'm going to yield my time to the parliamentarian who probably has a take on whether or not we're going to interpret these election rules.
1 minute.
Thank you very much, Lee. As the Assembly's parliamentarian, it is my duty to offer the official interpretation of the governing documents. Regarding the decision here today, this resolution is pertinent to the JCC's authority over overturning the Elections Committee as an appellate body. I prepared a one-page memo in light of all information released last night, read through and examined precedent. So when we're looking at the section in the rules that was violated of Article 2, Section E, Part 8, Subsection 3, the passive language, I'm siding with the JCC's interpretation as an appellate body, and in my recommendation, I use the reasonableness standard in quote of what I said, using the standard of what a reasonable person would do. If an entity has been declared unfit to make a certain decision, there should be no reasonable expectation for that entity to reprimand the universe itself.
I'm gonna extend by 15 seconds.
Okay. And to briefly expound upon that, my analysis is based on the JCC's ability to conduct an investigation. When people are brought into a disciplinary issue, the disciplinary bodies are designed to investigate. investigate that to their fullest capacity based on what they have. Withholding evidence and bringing it in after the fact is
point of inquiry, real quick. Two quick questions.
Yes. Parliamentarian.
Okay. What?
Two quick questions.
Yes, two quick questions.
That, did you endorse in this race? And who did you endorse?
So yes,
sir. Yes, in fact, I did endorse Maroon publicly. However, this decision rests upon my interpretation of the election rules, as well as I released a memo based on facts and evidence, and it contains precedent.
Okay.
And I will.
Travis, I'm just like a question.
So in this instance, I just want to know Zach believes that he can separate his endorsement from his endorsement from his ruling. Yes or no?
Yes, so I
made a decision. I publicly created a memo based on facts and gave it to other people, unlike this committee. Thank you.
Point of information. All right, so, can I make the point of inquiry? Yes.
Part A of the reconsideration for election rules, subsection 3, that specifically states the decision of the election committee may be overturned, but doesn't give the onus on who is doing the overturning. That's the point. That doesn't give any direction to that.
Yes, in response to that, there is a section that includes precedent mentioned by people who were there when the rules were drafted. The assembly has
relied
on precedent for years. The person who drafted the rules was in the room earlier in this meeting explaining what they
did.
Okay, we have 2 minutes left for this discussion, so I'm going to move on to the next speaker, is Myra. There's a stage
we have this stuff waiting a week for a reason. And this is a decision that we're making today is important.
Okay.
And I think that there are a lot of voices and emotions in this room right now. And the reason that we wait a week is that we hear this, we deliberate on our own, we come to our conclusions, we research, and then we come back, discuss again, and come to a final decision. I think that process is important.
Please do not interrupt. Okay, so we're going to vote, okay? All those in favor of moving this to business of the day, raise your placards. Very high. Keep it up. All those against? Abstentions.
Point of order.
11-9-1 does not pass. I'm gonna, as a chair, motion to table this.
Dissent.
All right, then make a motion to extend the meeting.
Motion to extend the meeting by 30 minutes.
Second.
Is there a dissent? It seems like there's a dissent. Did you dissent?
Okay, no, wait. It's not necessarily a dissent. My question is, if you guys don't want to wait a whole week, why don't we just give another day to meet before the whole week is over?
And we can't have a special session, that is true. Okay, but there's been a motion to extend by 20 minutes, and there was a second. Is there a dissent? Is there a stage or dissent? Okay, everyone there, right? So,
I don't know, like, kind of point of order, I guess, but I think that the way that this has been handled for the last 20 minutes has not given anybody in the community the ability to speak. It has only been members of the executive board that have been able to voice their opinions, and I think that's highly unfair and inappropriate.
Okay, so you then vote in favor to extend.
I don't have a vote, but I would encourage members of this assembly to do their
We are in the motion. We are in the middle of voting now. Vote in favor of extending the meeting by 20 minutes. Raise your hands or placards.
Is it possible that if we extend the meeting, we can say that
there's... Wait, let's go to the vote first. It's clearly a majority. We're going to extend by 20 minutes.
Yes, it is. Let's just say, I want information. Can you just extend the meeting by 20 minutes, but just say that only community members are those that's going on?
You can do that. So only committee members at this point can talk. Unless the question is addressed to. So if you want to vote on that, consent.
Motion for the next 10 minutes be strictly community members.
All right, guys. Olivia. Raise the consent letter, say her consent.
And I would like to exhaust the business first and then.
That is true. There's been too many alternations. That is true. Okay. Is there a dissent? You said a dissent? Okay, then we're going to do that, okay? So next is Paul Monahan.
Press the bottom.
Can someone get him a new mic, please?
No.
No, it's Paul Monahan.
Hello, everyone. My name is Paul. I think it's kind of really weird that we keep talking about getting the community members' opinions on this whole debate, because what we're really discussing is a committee invalidated the opinions of the community. So this is all so absurd that we're like, oh, it's allocated two more times to the committee, but we're still here after a 3-hour meeting. Let's just go right to the votes and see who won. How much this committee may have been biased. I'm not sure I was there. The parliamentarian didn't buy it there. Who knows? But you know what the best way to gauge the community is to look at the votes and whoever has the most votes is the best.
I think the next will be the answer. You have 1 minute.
Thank you. So, first of all, I think the committee did a fine job. I think the JCC did a fine job. I think it would. We can all agree that it should be the JCC that has the final ruling. I think that we can all agree that the rules need to be changed, and when they are changed, it will be the JCC that has the final ruling. I think it would be a very good precedent to set. It would sort of put this matter to bed immediately if the committee just came out and accepted that JCC had the final ruling, because I know that the committee doesn't agree with that, but it is in the rules that the JCC is allowed to rule on them, and the JCC did, and I think it would set a very good precedent if they reversed their decision to disqualify and just apply not to be back.
Okay, next is Alan Polyak.
Hi, I would just like to say even if the JCC found the Elections Committee to be biased, the decision could still be sound. I think it's very inappropriate to dismiss an entire group of people based off who they are, because the decision could still be true. And in fact, it is, because the rules say explicitly that if the candidate is using a logo, that violates the rules, and therefore he should be disqualified. And it doesn't matter if the JCC found bias, because who is in check of the JCC? Why does the JCC have check over the Elections Committee when no one has check over the JCC?
Point of information.
What's your point of information?
Can we clarify?
The quorum, can everyone please quiet down?
Sorry, this is the thing I keep
doing. Daniel, please make it quiet.
This one doesn't work.
This is a point of information.
This one also doesn't work.
I'll just
project. Okay. Point of information. The thing that's kind of that's kind of confusing
here is the point of the criteria of the violation. I don't think everyone is completely clear of the wording, because the wording of what initially disqualified Rude is ambiguous, and I don't think it's fair to say that one person is biased over another. So I think we need to just give cold hard facts of what specific wording led to the violation to come to some sort of resolution here. So all this back and forth would just like making everyone pissed off and kind of mean too. So
I'm gonna yield to the Elections Committee.
So at this time, like in the daily article that I believe was released today, and Noah from the Elections Committee voiced what line specifically we are referring to. And in terms of promotional materials, and I will say this, I got time. Noah already had permission, but he already broke confidentiality. The line was previously improperly cited. In the correct line within section 5 of the promotional materials is, candidates' promotional materials must include the dates, times of the Elections Committee and be in compliance with election guidelines. No Cornell insignia or logo is allowed. There was no reference to the previous top section in the Elections Committee's decision. It is referenced to that monument.
Okay.
No Cornell insignia or logo.
Is that an answer?
Yeah, I mean, okay. It still keeps ambiguity in my mind.
Okay.
It's
a rule
that's
point of order.
Wait,
turn on.
Point of order,
we're still
in
the 10-minute period for community members.
Yeah, so next is Barbara Cruz.
Hi, everybody. Barbara Cruz, co-chair of Las Vegas Latina. Full disclosure, we did endorse the Wilmer LaRue after meeting with both candidates and several other SA members. Thank you to both SA candidates and several others for that as well. This isn't a comment on the current situation, this is more of a comment on. Once again, I brought this up this is the second time now, the professionalism of student assembly candidates repeatedly, like just social media. Like, y'all, I see like several members of the student assembly posting like really ridiculous, really immature things regarding this actions. I haven't seen anything from Peru. I haven't seen anything from Dale. And the fact that like student assembly members have taken it upon themselves to think, like, sure, yeah, like, make your opinions clear, but at the same time, that's really unprofessional, and I think that's really tainting. This whole process. That's all I have to say. Second
Thank
time
you.
I brought this up
as well. So that exhausts the community speakers list. So we're gonna go into the SA speaker list. Next, Mara. Mara, it's you.
Oh, I yield.
Oh, it's your side.
Hi, yeah, so my name is Maria Weintra. I'm the incoming hotel school representative. And as someone that's sort of walking in here for the first time in the student assembly, this is really disappointing to me that everything that's going on here, that just the massive amount of bureaucracy that we're dealing with. The fact that a candidate was disqualified over a meme to me and to my constituents and to the people I've spoken to is frankly ridiculous. The JCC rule that the Elections Committee defines, JCC has the final say. Time and time again, we've seen in this case that what has happened and what continues to happen and the actions that the Elections Committee are taking in refusing to accept the JCC ruling are not the way that things should be proceeding. And at the end of the day, we need to remember that we are here to represent the students.
Seconds.
That's our purpose. And if the voices of the students are not heard and if the students are not kept in mind, how can we really claim to still be the student assembly and represent the students?
Next is Rian. Can someone?
Exhausting.
Yeah, the community speakers is exhausting.
All right. I just wanted to make sure everyone's aware that if we do overturn the election committee's ruling, then incoming undesignated representative who was told that they will be on the assembly next year will suddenly be kicked off. And I think before we make a decision, we really should consult her and that she should be considered. And then Joan, in a email sent to the committee, confirmed that the elections committee had the final say in according to the JC, or like in reference to the JC report, and he was encouraged to send that email by the Office of the Senate.
Okay, next is Grace.
So I just have a question for Travis. So you claim that you adhere to all the rules delineated by the Elections Committee. So. The article or the letter of the op-ed written by Austin said that the second election had two, 8-1 in the total of 11 votes, right? And then,
Yeah.
So when I was going through the members of the assembly, I realized that there are 11, including me. Is that true?
Both.
Yeah, so 2-8-1, is that true?
Is in regards specifically to which
shall
that, that's the reconsideration.
Right? Yes.
So I guess I'll say this information, that's not the vote that's on the document that was sent to the Chum on Chum report, I believe, to my knowledge.
But were there two hands were eight hands were in the one for yourself.
Oh, yeah. Oh, actually, yes, yes. Yes.
So that means that four members should have recused themselves over the second decision for me.
So you have to learn the simple response. This is what they
The candidate, the elections committee interpretation of, once again, the endorsed candidate line for recusal applies to the endorsed candidate. The organizations that endorse Dale Barbaria, not Verbrugge. And so the elections committee felt that you can still make a decision without considering that. It does not change. No, listen, it's about the process and it's not about the person. The effect is regardless whether or not Verbrugge could have gotten, I mean, Dale could have still. Wait.
I'll give you 10 more seconds. I'm going to recognize it.
Okay. So, the elections committee, this is what I truly believe is sound logic. Regardless of what happens in a two-person race, the actions inherently affect one another. That's the action. But the actual process is considering the individual and the alleged violation that they made as an individual. Regardless of what one individual makes, is their actions. The effect is in a two-person race, yes, if one is disqualified, the other one automatically wins. But that is not something that is considered when you're looking at the exact challenge that is in front of you. It's about the process and not considering the action that results after. That is two different things. You consider if a challenge happened against one candidate, and in a two-person race, yes, that impacts the other, but that is not the process of what you're considering.
Next is Savannah.
Oh wait,
Savannah.
It's okay. Okay, so for the initial one, that was from for 6-1-1. So the four members recused themselves from the discussion. Is that correct?
The candidates, wait, this is all in regards to the room, correct?
Yes.
So the
members, all the voting that were mentioned in Austin's op-ed.
I don't know that.
So this is going to be the 7th grade, okay, sir.
In the votes that took place for the room.
Wait, hold on, give me a second. Can you ask all your questions and now give them 30 seconds or something?
Okay.
So all at once.
Okay, so I want to ask, first of all, did they recuse themselves, if they did, before, like, not only for the voting, but also for the discussion? Another question that I have is that, so the voting that was from 2-8-1, that means everybody participated in the election committee. So since there were two people, wouldn't you naturally think that the decision is biased and the JCC decision might make sense, that naturally there were four votes that were counted to the second decision?
No. All right, now you have 30 seconds, or 30, strictly 30 seconds, okay?
Thank you. No. To you, no. Because no one recused themselves in the votes considering the room, because no one sat on the executive board that endorsed the room. The only people that sat on the executive board that endorsed the candidate was Dale. And those members recused themselves during voting
for
Dale. Does that clear it up for you?
Okay, next is Ashley. Can someone pass the grace? Can you pass the mic, please? We have 5 minutes left for this discussion.
So I have multiple points. The first one is for people that are like saying the elections committee isn't useful and isn't representative of the student body. I'd just like to point out that this isn't close to the scale of the case, but if an election is impacted by a third party, which we have seen, would you not want an external committee to preserve the democracy of the election by factoring in all considering factors? Furthermore, the importance of confidentiality in this is not to just protect the people who are talking in a closed room, but also to protect them from the opinions of others, because we've seen in the past days that opinions have been drastically swayed because people have been being pretty vehement and violent towards our elections committee members. However, saying all that, I do think
15 seconds.
Based off the information we have, the elections committee might have made a mistake in not yielding the JCC's recommendation. And until I see documentation with convincing evidence from the elections committee that the JCC was incorrect in their determination, I would be hard pressed to uphold the decision of the elections committee for doing it. Okay.
But just to be clear, during most of the business of the day, we have the ability to vote on it. Okay, all those in favor of moving this to business of the day? Wait, is there a dissent? Okay, there's a dissent. I'm going to assume it's the same reason. All right, all those in favor of moving this to business of the day?
Wait, state your dissent as to why not. State your dissent.
Wait, Chris, can you stop? Hey, Tarok. It's a different dissent? All right.
So the dissent is, I would not like to vote to move this to business today. That requires a higher margin of votes to easily pass it through. So this requires 60% versus just motion of voting on it requires 50%. So this provides a stronger barrier just randomly pushing through a document that means a lot to the campaign and re-election.
Do you withdraw your motion? All right, we're ready to vote. All those in favor of moving this business of the day?
Are we voting on?
Raise it high. Hey. All those against? Abstentions. All right, 13-6-1. Is that 60%? All right, my brain's dry. Wait,
that's
the same.
That's the exact problem
that
was the exact problem I was
talking
before.
Yeah, those are dissenters.
That's the exact problem I was talking about before. Now we're just going to try and push it through. Use the debate where it's actually a significant issue that we should be discussing more with more of
that. Discussing for an hour.
Huh? Okay. We have a new speaker this month then, but there is a motion to vote on the floor. The meeting is until 7:30. We have 2 minutes left. We're currently in a different motion to vote right now, okay? And there's been a dissent that's been stated. We're going to vote. Yes, it's been stated. Was there a second?
I second the motion.
Right,
I think people deserve to vote.
All those in favor of voting. This is not the actual vote. This is.
We're voting to vote.
50%. All those in favor of voting. It's a vote to vote. We're voting to vote. Are those against? All right, it did not pass. So we'll go to discussion. So I'm going to create a new speaker.
Second.
State your dissent into the mic.
Dissent.
That's your option. Oh, yeah, yeah, no, no.
Are
you checking
the votes? Or?
Yeah. Okay.
All right,
the
four.
Olivia, Travis, Dave, everyone, okay. So there's been a motion to extend by 30 minutes. Has there been a second? There's been a vote. Yeah, so all those in favor of Becca, all those in favor of extending by 30 minutes.
Yeah, we need a solution today.
Decorum, can you? Okay, Olivia, can you let him count? All those against? Oh, that's the majority. All right, the meeting will go until 8:01. So, Daniel, you're raising your hand for the speakers, this, right?
Yeah.
Shushuda, this is a new speaker, so Debbie, you raise your hand. Chris, okay. Olivia.
Do you guys have two mics? Both of ours are dead.
Giovanni, you're number three. Okay, next on the speakers list is Daniel. In the meanwhile, Myra. Where's Myra? Can you ask the universe if they want to speak on the new speakers list? All right, Daniel.
So,
1 minute.
I don't support the resolution as stated because I don't like the idea of like claiming that there's some bias per the traditional codes. Like the JCC's report, but I do think that there needs to be an overturning decision based on my real feeling of the ambiguity of the terms of the violation that you guys explained in the wording. I mean, is there anyone else in this room who reading section 5, like ambiguously aware of this constitutes as promotional materials in the context of what the election?
30 seconds.
I will say this once again.
You have 30 seconds.
I've spoken as me and not as the committee, but I very much feel that this resolution passed, as well as taking into account exactly what he said.
Sorry. Evan, Olivia. Yeah.
That I have no problem with revealing the vote, taking all those factors into consideration that I just mentioned. But I do have specifically a problem with saying that the committee was biased. And that's what I voiced today. And that is why I'm here right now. I believe in the institution of democracy, but I have a problem with saying the committee acted in a biased manner, according to that JCC report, which was biased from a biased perspective.
Next is Omar.
Yeah, they're all bad. We've been here for some time.
Okay. I personally didn't endorse either candidate in this race, but I like helped make sure that I did it. And I still can't say if I've come to like a full decision on the resolution itself. But what I do know is that it seems to me like we're just taking this resolution and kind of jamming it through the most strategic way by the same like motion to this thing kept happening again and again, even though it was shown that like there was clearly not a majority in favor of it. And if people just waited until members like thinned out, we waited for the meeting to catch on, and if people left the room, if suddenly we're trying to move the resolution to this day and vote on it today. I still have a side of who I'm trying to support, but I find it inappropriate that we're taking a huge decision that clearly a lot of people have thoughts about and just trying to do it last minute, jam it through, because we want to see a certain person be president next year.
Point of privilege.
Yes.
People talking about not wanting to make this decision right now. It takes 6 SA voting members to call a special meeting. Between now and next Thursday, y'all want to meet and discuss this? Do so.
I have that. Okay, the next speaker. So I'm going to go back to community member. There's a community member that was just speak. Bernard? Yeah. Bernard, okay.
So, I just see a lot of division amongst you guys, and it does not look good. I'm just saying that. Back in, doesn't look good, first off. There's been a lot of attack to the committee, the election committee, and I see that as the biggest problem. My problem is with the term these, the term bias. So you guys can say that they were unwise with your decision, and that would make sense for you to say they were unwise with your decision. And I read in the Daily Sun that Brewer was previously disqualified for pre-campaign, and it got overturned. My question to the election committee would be, why did it get overturned? Second off, in response to this, this is a general question to the assembly. If they overturned the decision to disqualify him before and disqualified him now for the Cornell logo, if they were really biased, wouldn't they have disqualified him for the first time? If you think about it, does that make sense to you guys? Like, if they disqualified him the first time and they disqualified him again, is that biased? My question to you guys is, because that seems to be the biggest problem here.
Next is Austin.
Yeah, so Judy, I think I speak for almost everybody here to see a vote, and we want to see it now. It would be a mistake not to vote now. We are all we have all the information we need. We literally have so many reports. We have so many reports. We all want a resolution. We want it now. Please vote. Please send your speech. Please, all of us to vote. Please, you want to go home.
It was to everyone. Bernard, did you have a question? Okay, Travis, you have 30 seconds.
Travis,
this
I would say the committee overturned that previous decision because they evaluated the process and they realized candidate question group at the time did not deserve to be disqualified. They evaluated what was in front of them, made a decision based off of the rules, and ruled that he should not have been disqualified as well. And in regards to the second one, which was, I believe, addressed to you guys, that if we could overturn one decision, I mean, we'll choose to not disqualify a candidate off of one challenge, would that not be applied the same logic that is being used towards the second one?
Next is Shivani.
Okay, a few things. First, I find it extremely disrespectful that I have been sitting here waiting for 3.5 I wasn't even put on the original speakers list, even though I raised my hand, and now other people are being spoken in front of me, which is fine. But secondly, there have only been 3 people on this body that have made an effort for community members to be able to get a voice, and I find that highly reflective of the lack of democracy that is in this room. Second, I think that it is, again, to reiterate what a lot of other folks have been saying, shameful that an Ivy League institution, we as non-voting members of this body, have waited 2 weeks with no information other than whatever has been leaked to the Sun, which is also questionable because the Sun inherently has its own biases. The editorial board also endorsed Dale. I think that there is a sheer amount of bias that has been continuously throughout this process outside of the elections committee from the way that this body has operated and the way that the Court of Fund has operated. And it is, and I would urge people to work on this resolution today because it, as an elected representative, your first obligation is to the people that you represent.
Is there a motion? We have 1 minute.
Thank you. No, it is the responsibility of every person that has had the privilege of being elected onto this body to do what is best for the Cornell community. And there have been multiple members of the Cornell community who are demanding that votes be released and who are demanding for answers. And so I highly encourage you, as someone who does not have a vote on this assembly, to stand by that obligation. Second, I think that there are conflicting views on ethics, integrity, and fairness, which continues to underserve democracy. Thirdly, and lastly, I want to affirm something that Olivia said earlier, which is about the generation of folks about mental health. This is specifically for the people in the audience to hear. Sitting up here this semester has given me the awkward and unique position to be able to closely work with a lot of folks that are on this committee as someone who cannot vote in their procedures. And I think that we should also hold ourselves to better standards of decency as we speak to the folks that are up here, saying that after I roasted them. But regardless, I think that we have a responsibility as Cornell community members to also remember that these people are our peers and that this does greatly affect the way that they operate on this campus, especially in the context of their academic responsibilities in addition to sitting up here. So, thank you.
That's this, Becca.
Okay, so I want to get away from the bias, whether or not I believe the elections committee was biased or not. There must be a way for the elections committee to be overturned. It says that. How are we going to take the JCC's ruling that the elections committee, whatever it was, that they were biased, basically saying, you guys are wrong, and then giving it back to them so that they can say, oh wait, no I wasn't. Obviously they're not gonna want to be I was wrong, but someone else, a third party, no bias at all, said they were wrong. Why are we trying to take these votes away from them? Let the students decide if they want to put it or down. They shouldn't be able
to.
Hello,
Okay, I just want to say that there was a rule broken, okay? And we have disqualified people for rules broken in this election many times. We have disqualified people, and so no one should be exempt. The rule that states that no pronoun, logo, or insignia is allowed applies to all candidates, and it is just like Urban talking.
Okay, next is Nick Burles from the Sun.
Don't you also have to prove an impact in athletic?
So to answer that, according to the current rules, there needs to be material advantage. Yes. Yes, yeah, so it's up to the Elections Committee to see that and also determine whether there is a material impact. I'm going to yield to Travis.
So just a few different points. So one, like once again, people continuously say this is a stupid rule, we don't care. And at the end of the day, how do we weigh one rule better than another? Vertical talking to me is ridiculous at this point. But it's like something that just exists. It's because of the impact it can potentially have. And that is the same thing that goes for memes. Logos. Sorry, guys. But that is the same logic that is being used and applied. Just to also address that. In addition, I understand people keep saying the votes are discounted, but your votes mattered still to every other race. This is one race where one candidate said that potentially, and I say this, that they will not abide by the rules. Every other candidate, if a challenge was raised, it was considered.
Motion to vote.
Richard, is that? Okay, so there's been a motion to dissent. All those in favor of voting?
On
this, yes.
The resolution itself.
What?
This is a vote to vote on this resolution. It requires a 50% majority to go into voting. This is not your vote on the resolution. Put your placards up if you're in favor of voting.
Okay, is that up?
Wait, can we still do that? No, I can't.
All right, it fails.
Real quick, I do want to point out, because I think I've heard this from several people, that the editorial board of The Sun did endorse Dale. I am not part of that at all. That's I'm the city editor, I'm news editor. I actually didn't vote in the election at all for any candidate in any race. So if you do have any questions about any bias, please feel free to reach out to us. But I do want to emphasize that I personally take the distinction between the editorial board and the news side very seriously. Also appreciate it when people criticize us, so please do write a letter to the editor if you do have any problems with coverage. Thank you.
Next is Shruta.
For people in the audience, of those of you who saw the meme, did you guys perceive any sort of the logo being on the meme change the way you guys interpreted that meme?
No!
A majority of the people.
Yeah. Okay, this is all right, next is
Shira. Okay, so the elections committee says that they have documents that they believe would change the decision. So I am urging the elections committee to release those documents to the next day, at which point the JCC can review them again, and then have a special session with the assembly, and then we can vote on this resolution.
I say this as someone who's been directly impacted by the election. The elections committee will work as fast as they can to release the documents. I'm not going to promise something in 24 hours, because at the end of the day, getting their point across is the most important part, and that is transparency. Rushing a document will not result in that. This committee, I spent the time with these people a little bit too much time. And that is just to say how awful they are in every single one of their deliberations. So I will say this, we can call a special one, a special session, but I'm not putting a hold on the elections committee. No, that's not, that's an open.
That's the state.
So I think that we're kind of veering around the line. So I think that, like, really the only thing the essay should be doing is basically just like verifying that what happened was the elections committee like broke their rules, and that in them doing that, they like the result that they declared is like not the real result. And so, like, unfortunately, we have to vote on that. And I'm pretty disappointed because like a lot of people here that I know supported Dale or supported Maroon, like clearly, like I understand why you might not want someone to like win. I get it. But like seriously, guys, this is really, really simple. They got overturned. Like they literally got overturned and are refusing to recognize that they got overturned. We have to put our pants on. Like just do it and just like acknowledge that this happened, that they got overturned.
That's this, Debbie.
Hi, so if we're gonna talk about the rule of overturning, if you look back to the rules that we are talking about, in the section 8 that talks about reconsideration, in the part 3, in the last sentence, it says, if the JCC review finds that the application of the rules was biased, the decision of the election committee may be overturned. And I know that you guys believe that it should be overturned, that it ought to be, but if the elections committee didn't have the information that they have, because I'd like you guys the like prior knowledge of the intent of this rule, they, in their purview, could have believed that they still had that authority, which is what the resolution on the floor is asking us to specifically talk about. And so I think I'd like you guys to respond to that. The information from the man from 2014 brought to the table about the impact of that specific rule. Did you guys have information about that? And
so
that should determine whether or not you vote on this one.
We, the elections committee, were not aware of any other interpretations of the rules. We were a body of students that applied to this committee and were charged to interpret the election rules to the best of our knowledge. And that is what we did. We interpreted them to say that the decision may be overturned, but not that it shall. And in other terms, there was no bias because she was not operating under all of the full information. No small could have been.
Next is Chris.
I don't see how you can have the perspective that the votes should not be released. There's just like, there's so many levels on which the votes should be released.
Did break their own rules. Like, they would have to prove that they did not break the rules in any case. And they gave full justification because five-handed voting. All people were there always for full testimony in the entire deliberations at all times before they voted. And everything else that's mentioned in the court won. And there's no indication whatsoever that the election committee did not break at least one of those rules. Just one of them, and they have a conclusion that came to is invalid. That's just the first one. Secondly, the person who drafted the rules just now said that the JCC's role was seen as an arbiter, as like a check on the election committee. The person that specifically drafted the rules, it doesn't matter whether or not the election committee was aware of that. That's what the rules mean according to the people that wrote them. Okay? It doesn't matter whether or not you guys were aware of that. That's what the rules mean according to the people that wrote them. And third, how is not releasing the election results a good solution? Please tell me.
Once again,
the results should be released because that is the only democratic mechanism. Most of the time.
Once again, once again, to move forward, if members of the assembly right now want to edit this resolution to remove the lines that the committee was biased, we can release the results. That is the problem at this moment. That was what was voiced again prior to this resolution hitting the floor. It is the fact that the members of this committee are being questioned in the time that they serve. And once again, I stand by the committee in saying that they were not biased in their efforts in evaluating this resolution. To evaluate this resolution right now and to remove the bias claims, we can move forward to release the results, but also take into account what Ian mentioned about there is an undesignated rep that would be called into question.
Was there a second?
Dissent.
All right, state your dissent.
We should amend the resolution.
before we vote.
But I'm okay, we can catch it up. So, all those in favor of voting, raise your placards. This is a vote to vote.
Can we amend after this vote?
No.
So then,
let him make his amendment.
All right, there's only five hands up for to move this to pass, so that fails. I mean, to vote, so it fails, okay?
He doesn't want to pass it if it's going to be like, all right.
Blame
on them.
All right, with that, Olivia? Lyra? Again, because you're the sponsor of the resolution, I'm going to let you speak for 30 seconds.
They just took our reigning in members.
I am okay making amendments, but like we can't deny the fact that the elections committee literally got overturned. Like that happened. I don't know why people are pretending like it didn't happen. Like, yeah, it's the passive voice, but she like explicitly like addressed this in her report. Now, can I ask her enough time to just read the section where she's like explaining why she has the ability to do it?
And then you have to stop that.
Okay, now stop. Okay. The language of the rules is slightly ambiguous, given that part of Article 2, Section E 8.3 is written in passive voice, which results in the lack of the subject. The only subject in the previous clause of the sentence is the Judicial Code's Malice of Review. Given that the Judicial Code's Malice of Review is to serve as a safeguard against procedural bias, regarding the review as simply a recommendation to the body that rendered the bias decision would not be an intuitive reading of the sentence. If the rules really intended for it to be a recommendation, then it likely would have made such a distinction clear. The language of Section 8.3 refers to overturning the committee's decision. It does not use words such as remand or recommend. There is discretion as to whether the decision may be overturned, because the word in may is used rather than must or shall. That discretion, however, is left to the Judicial Code's Council. It would be nonsensical and superfluous to have the Judicial Code's Council review the committee's conduct or not, find bias and ask the bias body to reverse it.
Okay.
Guys, they're just not using it. Just read the report. I don't know how to
read it. We're not working on the report. That's a shame.
But like, we should try to work with not antagonize that.
Great question. I'm not trying to escalate anything. I understand that you think your exams, homework, whatever. The information that JCC was given, I understand what people were saying, that there was information on when you're going to change your decision. How about we come into the room in the first place on the very first time that you will share the correspondence with you? I'm just curious. If the JCC needed to make an informed decision, non-biased, balanced, whatever, and there's apparently information that could change your decision or influence it in a way, how come she doesn't give information? I understand you. I understand that your committee members of the union don't have time to give all the information at once. How come she doesn't give information in the first place?
Why she wasn't? So this is, I want to reiterate this really, because this is the first time in the history of student assembly that the JCC has ever been used. This process has never been touched. The fact that this assembly right now is threatening to overthrow the decision, that's not even written anywhere. That is a decision that this assembly is taking to say that their body, we're making up rules and we're just going to say overthrow. So just in regards to that. But also all information was provided to the JCC was what's listed in the election rules. And now we report that process does need to be changed. Because in addition, we also had no idea what Berlin was voicing in terms of bias that never was sent to the committee.
Good.
I have another question.
Okay. Next is Olivia.
Okay, I just want to point something out, which is literally, I fully, 100%, wholeheartedly believe that this elections process was not biased. Put that aside completely. It very clearly states in the rules, posters or quarter cards are a combination of both, no Cornell logo is allowed. No offense, his campaign also broke the rule the first time. So it doesn't matter. His campaign broke rules not once, but twice. This shouldn't even be a topic of conversation because for crying out loud, if I had done it, I would have been disqualified in 2 goddamn seconds. So this is absolutely ridiculous. For crying out loud, I fully trust they wouldn't be putting themselves in this bullshit if they had, if they don't wholeheartedly believe in their decision. And I feel so bad for that. And thank you guys for sitting here for 3 hours because honestly, like, if I were you, I would have gone for like 2 hours.
Is it me, McCord?
Next, Ms. Evan.
Is
It doesn't matter that the room broke the rules. That's not the problem.
Please do not.
JCC said that the committee was biased. That is what the JCC is the check on the elections committee. If we don't have checks on elections committee, then we
don't have more
questions.
Travis, let it finish and then you can respond, okay? We're taking turns here. Everyone's angry, but everyone's gonna take turns.
JCC has absolutely no skin deep. It's not her decision, not affected at all. The elections committee had every opportunity to write a full report detailing everything. I know that it wasn't something you guys hadn't done it before, but that's not something that is not a good enough excuse for not having a report that details the entire process. You need to have everything.
All right, Charles, you have 30 seconds to respond.
Just to say once again, this committee was empowered to numerous parties saying that we had final say. One, and two, obviously, if you're asking somebody, do I have final authority? Yes, they're going to say they have final authority. Who's going to say that they don't? The same way that the elections committee feels that they're empowered by this rule, she feels that she's empowered. Once again, she has yet to point out a job description. Listed in her job that says she has final say. Maybe it may make sense that way, but the way these rules are written says that we have that power. Clearly, she's going to feel that way. In addition, she is biased. So don't you think it's problematic that she would release the report, not consulting the elections committee at all to find out what was our theories or processes about the release of her report?
No.
We didn't submit what you're editing. That's what I'm saying to you. It's a biased process.
Travis. All right. So right now the time is 7:58. As a chair of this assembly, I'm gonna call a vote. So if you believe that, so this is not.
Everybody just be quiet. So if you look at section 6 of the standing rules under general meeting procedures, if you look at rule 6 of section 6, it reads, the chair may call the question without it requiring a second or a vote when he or she deems that debate has exceeded its time limit or when discussion has become repetitive. Now, the chair has called that. It is possible to overturn anything the chair does with a 50% vote. However, the chair does have the right in the standing rules to call this vote. You are able to overturn the vote with a 50% margin. Those are the rules.
So before we go into that, let me make a comment, okay? If you believe that this is, if you want to vote on this and you want to pass this, then vote. If you believe that this shouldn't be voted on today, vote against it. Okay, so otherwise, so keep on extending. People aren't changing their minds. Okay, that's why I didn't put it.
But you want to vote, you said you weren't going to change your mind.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but there is a group that has this room at 8 p.m. and I need you guys to.
Okay, we're going to vote right now.
We're voting.
Right. If you're for it, then vote in favor. If you're against, then vote against. This is not a vote to vote.
Okay.
This is not a
vote to vote. Respect the orders of the rulership, all leave this room. No.
Please, I, Travis, I respect the motion. Please, all those in favor of passing this resolution right now, raise your hand. All right, guys, so to call a procedure, this will be either the last or the second last vote. We'll get this done. So right now there is a motion to overturn on the floor. So if 50% of people vote to overturn, don't vote on this now. So if you put your placard up, you don't want to vote on the resolution right now. So with that said, who is in favor of a motion to overturn?
Are you voting against the voting for a resolution?
One.
You had your placard.
3, 4, 5, 6.
If you're in favor.
Okay, we have 8 votes to overturn here. And we need now who is in opposition here? Okay. If you're abstaining, okay, if you don't, if you want to vote right now, then you're against overturning. So we have one.
Everyone's
this is,
really being
this is
so
you want to vote right
like
now. Who wants to vote?
Why
okay.
Do you think you're better than
the you want to vote now? One,
the
two.
We're literally
voting.
Four, five. Now, who's abstaining? Who's abstaining?
Oh, can you get me?
One,
can you get me? No overturn.
Two.
Wait,
all right, this is overturned. But because we have to leave the room, this has been tabled to next week, okay? The meeting has been adjourned.
You know that final vote was?
This has been tabled. The meeting's over. You don't have this money.
Special meeting tomorrow? Fuck everyone. Close.